Intro video is done. Oh.
All right. Are we live?
No.
No. Are we live?
No.
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 Welcome to a surrealist episode of Crippled System.
Yeah. Welcome to Crippled System, episode 268.
Something. Are we live?
Yes.
Okay.
Welcome to the Broken David Robot program.
Wait. Hold on a second. When has my program ever worked?
Huh? When the sixth time you asked if we were live.
And I'm Dan.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Dave.
My phone had volume for a moment.
I tried to heal it.
It did. It's I don't know. It's something happened with my phone that suddenly the volume doesn't work on it. It's annoying. And it's my phone. I should actually turn on the chat so we can actually see who we're talking to.
Yeah.
Or if they're participating. Does anybody have anything? Announcements?
Adepticon?
Adepticon's coming, yes.
Yeah, Adepticon's coming up. I'm going to be out of town, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, most of us are going to be out of town at Adepticon.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
This is not vamping very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else?
It's going to be amazing in like a few minutes when Nathan gets here and he kills himself on the carpet.
Yes, because Andy has the dungeon here trapped.
I don't have it trapped.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. I could pull that carpet out.
It's a level one trap.
I mean, it's only like a DC 6 trap or so, but it's a trap.
And it's Nathan.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he'll be coming down the stairs and he'll have his phone in his hand going like this. Wonder why Dan just texted him, and then he'll just kill himself.
Can we point the camera in that direction so we can get it live?
Yeah, that sounds like work. Plus, I'm not sure if we really want to be live streaming death.
Yeah, or our death, or actually more specifically my death, because then he would probably try to kill me.
Well, then the camera's already in the right spot for that, so we'll be okay.
He is in chat right now.
Okay.
And he's yelling about you being in his chair.
Yeah, well.
We did switch the mic, Nathan.
Yep. Yeah. He snoozes, he loses. Yep. That's how it works.
You have your mic, which we have long said is the important part.
All right. We could talk about the most important thing in the world here is that Andy is undefeated in tournament play so far.
Yeah.
And last time, my last battle, I actually earned it rather than me blinding a heretic on a hill. I might have been able to still take out the heretic in that battle.
It would have been with a
melee colossal instead of shooting colossal.
Sure. Yes. The problem with that game was not the fact that we forgot heretic was immune to blind. It was that I was playing heretic with a two camp playing chicken with a two camp heretic.
Yeah.
When I had zero reason to be doing that.
Yeah, that is correct.
But that's what practice games are for.
Yep.
Yep. And that's that was actually my first game in with the Grimkin. I've never played Grimkin until that point, which I should mention that we're doing a small tournament here in Madison. Since we couldn't actually get a weekend to run an event through Pegasus, we're running a 4-week tournament. So you just got to meet sometime during the week and play your games, mm-hmm. Which I played against the Sam's child, which is the other Grimkin match I played against, and I learned a couple new things. Number one, that you can't play more than one card a turn. So I was dancing around. Was it Ruin? Is the anti-magic one? So I was dancing around Ruin forever after he had already played the Child's Wrath.
Oh, got it.
So I was like going, oh no, are you gonna trigger this so I can't knock down him? And then that's when Sam mentioned that. That I can just go ahead and get around it, and then I proceeded to hit the child with brittle ice for -2 armor, and then 2 ice cages for -4 defense. Then I blinded the poor bastard, and then I knocked him down with Scourge, and then 2 Doom Reavers walked up and. Or 3 Doom Weavers walked up and chopped them in half.
Congratulations.
In
half. You made the child defense -1.
Pretty much.
Because something I learned today is...
Is it defense 7 knockdown? I thought it was defense 5.
You start at 5, but I think the rule where your minimum defense is 5 is no longer exists. It just never matters.
Sure.
Yeah.
I guess technically there is one case I can think of where it matters. If a non-aiming bile thrall... No, even then it still only needs a 3. So it just does not matter.
Yeah.
But your defense can go lower the 5.
No, if you're firing an inaccurate,
inaccurate rocket needs a 4, not a 3. That is.
That's assuming that you don't have Severius Zero though, which isn't going to happen. So this is just fantasy land anyway.
Yes, it can be engineered though.
Is he out yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sevi Zero is a Source Zero is not out yet.
Source Zero does not June, May. I don't know. Next week.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
I mean, next week she'll be at Adepticon.
She is pretty cool, though. I'm excited to possibly pick her up for the nice. She's got Fog of War, right? Is it?
I think it's Fog of War and Boundless Charge.
Boundless is the exciting one for Kador.
Yeah, because you can cast it on anything.
Yeah. Yep.
Not Doom Reavers, though. Damn it.
That's your choice.
Other stupid thing I didn't realize. So funny thing is, I forgot about this rule that Mark III introduced. It's called Power Up. So for all my tournament games. Except for the most recent one, I never use Power Up.
You were cheating then, because it's not optional.
Yeah.
I mean, he was voluntarily burning one every turn on the Old Witch. Because you were at least only doing it in a one-jack list.
Yeah, at least in that regard, yeah.
Like, it wasn't like you were playing, like, Karchev's, you know, 7 boys, and then, you know, like, this really sucks.
Yeah, it was like, man, I need to get some more Greylord Forge Seers.
I don't know why people keep saying this is good.
Yeah, the Forge Seers were, yeah. Oh, man. Such a beautiful model.
So back to the Grimkin thing, Andy. I don't remember if it was Pagani or someone told me that for a while when they were testing it, the Arcana cards were secret until played.
Oh.
Like that didn't make it too CID, but.
Oh, I think that's right. I think you should do that. I think that should be. Oh, my God. That would change everything.
That was also when Trump Arcana were not locked to the caster.
Okay, so you could have... Oh, ugh.
Yeah. Like, there is a reason that rule got changed.
Sure. I think it would be fine to have the other two being secret.
I mean...
No?
Not with what they are. Like, you would have to have a completely different set of cards.
Okay, all right.
Like, otherwise you'd have to be like, if I kill this model, does everything on his army heal, or do I suddenly become -1/-1, or does the entire army gain stealth, or, you know...
Yeah, I guess. I guess then they'd have to change the power levels of them.
Correct. Like, okay. It is a good change because it was literal Yu-Gi-Oh! For a while.
Sure.
And we all know what happens when it's literal Yu-Gi-Oh!
Well, somebody shits in a corner in this game store. that's what happens.
Yep.
So speaking of CID, there was a pretty big one that has happened recently.
Yeah.
That's small.
Yeah. The Infernals. Yeah. Whatever. There's like a local that
literally
in our area
the faction.
Yep.
That's really, really excited for him. I can't think of who it is.
Was that Dank Legacy?
You said it, not me.
Also, we're just getting to it.
Yeah, we're
like
both.
When have we ever been on schedule?
Don't worry, Andy. I think we're both getting stabbed the next time we see Travis.
You had to give me up in that too. I mean, I should do at least a premeditative stabbing. for those who don't know, we all love Travis, and we thought it'd be, well, I thought it'd be entertaining.
Yeah, I was gonna say, can we watch our pronouns at this point?
I thought it would be entertaining.
I had nothing to do about it besides not warning him when I knew it was happening a month ahead of time. or a week ahead of time.
Since I know the person that runs Conflict Chamber, I thought it would be entertaining for a good...
What are you doing, dropping names now?
What? Oh, you don't run Conflict Chamber at all?
No, he just writes it.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
We all know the internet runs it.
Oh, I suppose.
Probably AWS, but...
But, yeah, no, we...
actually not.
I suggested that we should call the theme for his Dank Legacy. And it lasted all but maybe 20 minutes before he got a lot of screenshots out of it, though.
Yeah.
And, I think Travis was mad and very angry at me for the next day and a half.
And has since forgotten.
Yeah, it probably is forgotten. And then we bring it up now.
Oh, is he in chat now?
I can look, but I don't... I hope he's not. I did... He probably is.
Oh, yeah,
yep,
there
he's
is.
In chat. We love you, Travis. Yeah. We really do. Seriously. You are our favorite Vulcan. It's not like my favorite Martian, but my favorite Vulcan.
You should stop digging. And besides, I have made sure to graffiti other areas of Conflict Chamber, mostly in the fact that a person's user, list name or player name is, what, over 200 characters long?
Yeah.
Just so I can give Quimby and Jake gigantic titles if I want.
What?
I extended the
column length on the player name thing so that I could give Jake a gigantic, like, Game of Thrones style name for a tournament.
Sure.
Mostly because I wanted this. Although, have you ever tested that with the new PDF generator?
No. It will probably look weird.
I want to see how it blows up. All right, I know what I'm doing later today.
Actually, I think what it'll do with the new PDF generator is it'll just it'll do it on multi-line and overwrite stuff.
My phone's making noises again. I'm so happy. I don't know what's helping it.
Anyway, be hailed.
And this crippled system was apparently recorded in 1994 when people were excited about cell phones.
I don't know. I've seen those videos from the 80s. It's
only
the
rich people that had cell phones then. I mean, have you seen
1999.
Our recording area here?
I mean, the walls look like, you know, the 90s, other than Bumblebee's crotch.
Also, if it was 1999 too, then I would have a Nokia.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wouldn't have to worry about any sounds.
Sure, but I mean, there's nothing to say it couldn't be 2019 and you have a working Nokia.
That's true too. That's what I'm saying, is that they're indestructible.
Yeah. All right.
And we get to see if Nathan kills himself. Nathan is now making his way to the podcast.
Ooh, 12 by 12. Can I have that?
No.
But I need that for my master bedroom.
Yeah, no. You know how hard it was? Think of the stairs you just walked down. Yeah. And think of how I got that down the stairs.
Yeah, well, you know.
So what you're saying, Andy, is that rug gets sold with the house.
Yes. I got that down here by myself, no doubt. And in my car.
Well, not all the way in your car.
It was hanging out a good 3 feet out of my car. Yeah.
And this is when Andy discovered the back roads from Home Depot.
And I'm Nathan.
Hey, welcome to Crippled System, Nathan.
Are we live now?
We were. There was a buzz.
What?
There's a little bit of buzz. It could have been on my phone or in my brain.
Or the car.
Is the chat buzzing? I should know that.
I don't know.
How is our audio sound?
It's all right.
Huh? So Nathan, as a long-time listener and first-time caller,
Lord Almighty,
Nathan, you should always know you're always downhill.
It's all downhill. The phrase "it's all downhill from here."
Yeah.
Does that mean that everything's going to get worse, or everything's going to get easier?
It depends on context. You can't say that in general.
Yes, I can. Like, we reach a certain point, and I go, okay, it's all downhill from here.
I mean, if you're saying that referring to a physical task, it usually means it's going to be easier. If you're saying that to referring to someone's health, it usually means it's going to get worse.
Unless you're in cross country, in which case all downhill is awful.
Fucking A.
What?
I didn't even realize I fixed the text on the
268.
It says 268.
Yeah.
Oh, like, we're high tech now.
We planned.
I planned to do this last week, but one person was extremely sick again, and another person couldn't make it. And then Nathan and I, we decided to not Eiffel Tower this podcast.
Yes, that's true. Oh, golly. What? Oh, what?
You know Matt Berry.
Yeah, I know Matt Berry.
Matt Berry
is playing Jemaine Clement's role, basically, in the television adaptation of the film we'll be doing the Shadows. Yeah,
yeah. I just realized that today because I was looking up the cast and I saw Matt Berry is playing in What We Do in the Shadows. I'm like, oh! I was going to record it anyway, but now it's definitely being recorded.
Okay. Tekatron in chat, I believe he's referring to the rug here, but he says he needs it for his master bat room.
Yeah.
And
it's where you keep of all of the bats you have, there's one that's in charge of them all.
Yeah.
And that's because it doesn't stay in
I figured it was a cricket term.
Yeah, well, sure, exactly. Well, I'm referring to that as well. So you have all of these cricket bats, and then you've got your best one, and that's the master bat. Mm-hmm. And so it needs its own room. You don't just put it like in a storage closet with the rest of the bats.
Yeah.
I was it sounded like an altar.
I was going to make a cricket joke, but I realized I don't know enough about that sport to actually do anything.
The important thing to know is that it can take literally weeks to play a game of cricket. What is wrong with you, England?
Yeah, there was a dude that actually got a PhD in math for his dissertation was a scoring system for cricket games that ended early.
Like people who think that baseball isn't boring enough go for cricket.
Yeah.
It's like baseball needs to take weeks. Cricket.
And also only
that's,
be a line.
That's what it felt like when I was a child.
Yeah.
So I was a Cub Scout, and I went to the father-son game over at County Stadium.
For cricket?
No, not for cricket. For baseball, though. Yeah. But it was my first experience really going to a baseball game. And I was ready to go at the fifth inning.
Yeah, no, there's four more of those bad boys.
No,
yeah.
there was about 10 more of those bad boys. So, I mean, it lasted up until like 17 innings.
The last Brewers game I went to was a 14-inning game where we lost 1-0. It was the most tedious fucking thing.
Yeah, just imagine that as like, you know, like a 6 or 7 year old.
I was say, this is my fear as a parent. Not that my son wants to play sports that I might not care about. It's that he wants to play baseball.
Yeah. No, I mean, this
anything else, something to give you CTE.
Like, please, just play soccer. Like, it's cheap. The insurance isn't too bad.
Oh, come on, soccer's actually worse for CTE than football now.
Sure, but you just run. Yes, that's because no one's doing football anymore because the insurance companies are removing high school football from existence.
But no, I mean,
fuck is CTE?
Chronic traumatic.
That's the thing where you get hit in the head too many times and then you slowly go insane.
Oh, yeah. So concussions.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, the...
Oh, the endocephalitis or whatever? Yes. Yeah, okay, yep. Sure.
Is it? Did I have the wrong term?
Encephalopathy. I don't know. No. Encephalopathy, I think.
Yeah, none of us can remember what the acronym actually is.
Sure, I'll look it up.
No. Soccer players actually have a greater incidence than football players because they hitting the ball as it turns out
hurts.
I mean, not just but hitting the ball regularly fucks up your brain.
Sure.
He had it right.
Yeah, chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Very good. Right. But I'm not going to try to repeat it.
I didn't say encephalopathy. I said like endocephalitis or something. Yeah. But yeah, I was off the... Also, Techatron, I'm not going to track down T20 cricket because if I'm going to go through the time and effort of going to find a foreign sport online, I am going to, as always and forever, going to watch kabaddi.
Mm-hmm.
Kabaddi now and forever.
That's like the Indian version of Red Rover.
It's the Indian version of dodgeball, where instead of throwing a ball, you have to tag them.
It's a wild Miso 82.
Yeah, now, but it's so good.
I will say that one of my experiences with baseball that really brought the sport into context for me was when I lived in Kentucky. I had a good friend that was a huge baseball fan and loved to talk about baseball and statistics and how the teams were doing and the strategy of the game and all of this.
Did he have a master bat?
No, I don't know if he had a master bat or not.
Which is like the master sword, by the way.
Yeah.
Like when the enemy has no runs, it shoots beams out when you swing it.
And so,
damn, now I'm interested.
Yeah.
We were having a conversation about baseball one time, and I said, yeah, and it's like, you know, I'll periodically sit down and watch a game and just get bored after two innings and wander off. And my friend, who is the baseball nut and loves baseball, said, oh, I don't watch the games. I just look at the statistics after the fact.
Sure.
And so it's like, okay, and it's like, I mean, so it's like I don't feel bad anymore because my friend that was most into baseball just treated it like a live-action spreadsheet and just looked at the results afterwards.
Mm.
So what you're saying is baseball is the eve of sports?
Yeah.
Yes. I don't like mocking it aside. I actually do enjoy baseball in general because the play calling can be interesting. You know, when do you do a sack bunt? When do you call in a reliever? Like, there's interesting things there.
The problem is there's nothing between play. Drink and totally in.
Sure.
The gap between that is awful.
Correct.
I feel the reason why I like watching NFL, even though NFL is crap anyway, general. But the reason why I like watching it is I can watch all the games. I can invest myself in one game per week, just all of them. I can see every single...
But 162 Brewers games can go fuck itself.
That's a little fucking too much.
I hear you.
It goes with all the other sports, too. Like, basketball is the same thing, and same thing with hockey. I would watch all hockey all the time if it wasn't... You know,
and then there's that other problem with having the 162 games is that it means that until you get to the postseason, every game is irrelevant.
Yeah, statistically speaking, they're so minor.
Yeah, and
that's how I feel about points in basketball.
Yeah,
when
correct.
The final score of a basketball game is 120 to 117, it's like, can you just skip to the last minute?
Last quarter?
Yeah. Not even quarter. Like, the last minute is where it gets
maybe five.
Yeah. Maybe
five. Well, even then, it's just people fouling each other.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Sure. The last minute is pretty much like a third of the game.
Yep. Yeah. No. Like, baseball, it's one of the things I'll follow my team on the sports page, you know, and just the over-under and, like, the games back is the actual sport. Baseball, like you said, Andy, you can definitely follow your team every game. I do think it's an unfortunate thing that America doesn't like it as much as it should, but hockey is, I think, pretty much the perfect spectator sport. The speed of hockey and the number of goals per game keep it exciting where every point matters without being the boredom of a 1-0 soccer game.
No, I will argue that.
I need that thing that the shows me puck. Where the ball, where the puck is.
Your eyes will evolve.
I know.
After a half, and it's different live. TV, it's tough, but when you go to live hockey, it's actually really easy to follow the puck.
Well, and definition of television has changed many, many years where it's a little bit easier to see.
I will argue that the ideal spectator sport is horse racing. Well, because if you have ever been to a horse race, the way it works is there are 2 minutes, is that they play the horn so you know action is going to happen. And there is 2 minutes of nonstop action. And then you have 40 minutes to refill your drink.
What do you mean we will check it out?
Root's fine.
One of us owns Root with the expansion and just backed the new expansion that's coming out.
Okay. Well, I was just saying we will check it out.
I brought it to War Machine Weekend. We played 2 games of it.
I didn't play it.
Yeah, well, you weren't there. Well, you were upstairs in the hobby room. Here. And it was the second game we played. There was the first game of Root that I saw played where the alternate victory condition cards came into play. Jackie was actually way behind. She had like 10 VPs to everybody else's like 30 or 40. And she got one of the ultimate VPs. So that was interesting.
That was the game with me and you in DC?
Yeah. Okay. I think like retroactively thinking about it, I think I could have gotten my primary victory condition if I had remembered that as the Vagabond, when you were at hostile relation with a faction, you get 2 VPs per thing you kill instead of just 1. And so I think if I had mathed it better, I might have been able to get it the last turn. But I was excited to have her win and use the alternate VPs, so I don't regret that I missed that.
Yeah, it was an enjoyable game. It was, you know, very unique, completely asymmetrical, and it was...
Yeah. They did some balance patches that they have. It's on Board Game Geek. It's a free downloadable file that you can print on sticker to put on the player aids, but it's also... part of the expansion Kickstarter that I just backed is getting full new actual boards, but they did some faction adjustments to make stuff a little more balanced.
Is that weird that you're not just calling it updates, we're calling it patches for a board game?
They're patches. I mean, they really are. Yeah, they changed some stuff.
And everything.
Like the Woodland Alliance gets fewer VPs for putting out their support tokens and stuff like that. Yeah. No, it's a good game.
Miso says that he's not just being British, but soccer is the best all-round game to watch. I have tried. I just cannot get into that game because of the passing at the midcourt.
Soccer is perfectly fine as a strictly worse version of hockey. Like, it really is just worse hockey. It's
soccer's redeeming quality continues to be you can play it for $5.
Could you almost?
Well, that's the thing. Is any poor child can get a ball and say that tree and that rusty Coke can are that goal, and then this my little brother's gonna sit there and he's gonna put his shoe over there and that's the other goal.
Correct.
Any poor kid can do that.
Correct.
And that's why soccer will always be huge, especially in third world countries.
Correct. Because it is by far the most accessible sport.
Yeah. But
could you
soccer on ice? Like how fast, how exciting that fucking puck. Soccer with nets on a stick and full contact. Lacrosse, great. Hurling, that's lacrosse, but instead of a net, you have a goddamn weapon and no armor. Hurling is like, I don't know why that is legal.
Could we actually put like arena football? Throw up some side fencing.
Arena soccer?
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Hurling has a significant death rate of players, doesn't it?
Hurling, and hurling, like, there's no pro players because, like, every city has their own team, but the players are all, like, volunteers purely out of loyalty to their city. Like, it's this weird thing where no one gets paid to play hurling. I don't know if that's still true, but it famously was true last I checked, which was only a couple years ago. But, yeah, hurling is scary shit. But still not kabaddi.
I also agree, though, that if you live in a place where the lakes don't freeze over, you can't have hockey.
Dallas has a hockey team.
Yeah, Dallas should not have a hockey team. Florida should not have a hockey team.
Las Vegas has a hockey team.
Vegas might. No, Vegas. Vegas. Nevada has lakes that freeze over.
Yeah,
they're just in the fucking
Vegas.
Mountains.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I'm fine with that. So California could get away with a hockey team, but not Dallas.
I don't know. We're talking about sports. The sports that
you can't have horse racing if horses aren't indigenous to your territory.
I mean, we shouldn't have any horses in all the U.S. because
they're
horses, not technically indigenous to.
So well, I mean, before or after the first extinction.
No.
Anyway, sorry, you were going to say walking past something.
I was
going to
say the sport that if I'm walking past that I have to watch is curling.
I unironically love curling. Yeah. Absolutely love curling. It is amazing the shit those people can do with those rocks.
Yeah.
That is a 42-pound stone that they are sliding down ice, and to get it to stop with that precision, and they'll like S-curve to the right of one thing, to the left of another thing, bounce off to. It's like, holy shit. The skill required in curling is astounding.
And the strategy of
bricking up in front to defend the house.
Once again, it's remarkably accessible.
Yeah.
Because all you have to do is be able to push
and
occasionally walk.
And sweep a room.
No, only two members of your team need to be able to do that.
That's true. Jeremy
and
actually,
great Jonathan Colton song about it.
Also a great song by, I forgot the name of the band all of a sudden.
Arctic Circle's asking about it.
Yeah.
I assume it's Sabaton.
Nope,
or
it's
Dream
not Sabaton.
Evil,
nope.
Or Dream Theater.
Nope.
All Andy does is listens to Dream Theater 24/7.
Yeah, but I mean, there's not enough math in curling for it to be Dream Theater.
Slipknot,
Hammerfall. There's a song with Hammerfall where they have the Swedish curling team on Hearts on Fire.
Hearts on
that doesn't go that way.
Strong
doesn't. No.
Rocky.
You're gonna get us demonetized. That was our.
Was that Rocky 2?
We need money to be demonetized.
Was it even a Rocky?
Yes, that is a Rocky.
It is
I don't remember which Rocky.
That's
Rocky
4.
Is it 4?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the training montage song.
Yeah. Well, I know it was a training montage song.
But
you just wasn't sure which training montage it was.
I mean, I only know that because of a Family Guy joke on that one. But.
Sure.
Miso asked if we guys are still playing War Machine. Yes, actively.
Not me.
Except for Nathan.
But I'm not avoiding it. I'm always busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy is undefeated in tournament play this year.
Yep.
He's catching up on you, Nathan.
I'm catching up on you, Nathan.
How many tournaments have you won?
I haven't won a tournament, but I'm undefeated.
So we're both undefeated, but I have two tournament wins.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, wait, I just...
You're undefeated without a win?
Yep.
What, did you get second because they didn't want to go another round? Or
it was a team thing,
so you went undefeated, but your teammates dragged you down?
No, his teammate got a bye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Our teammate got a bye, and then somehow our team got a bye, and then somehow Rick ended up losing the bye.
So chat points out that Texas is so big it does get below zero up in the panhandle, which is true. Something that I had never noticed until Friday when I was
nobody
looking.
Lives there.
Well, sure. I mean, it's Texas. Why would you? Yeah. But something that I had not noticed until Friday, I was just looking at time zones because whatever. There is like the teeniest fucking tip of the left-hand side of Texas. Like I'm talking like 10 miles of Texas is mountain time zone and the rest is fucking
Yeah, it's basically
why? Fucking why is that one town in the middle of nowhere deciding it wants to be mountain? Eat my balls. Just make that fucking central so the whole state's central. Like every other one that's mountain and central, it like splits the state pretty center, so I can understand.
Sure,
but Texas. The
sure,
whole
it's solely El Paso,
thing.
And that's only because there's a lot of people who live in El Paso and work at White Sands.
Jesus. Yeah, like again, Indiana's split, but it's a little bigger. It is a weird split where the upper left, like in the along the edge of Michigan, is central, but then not the rest along Michigan.
Well, and that's the same
the
reason
is
because
of
the people who live in Indiana and commute to Chicago.
Sure, but then. The middle of it's all eastern, and then the bottom is back to being central.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's a whole stretch.
Kentucky for that.
Yeah, there's a whole stretch of that
I
part of the country.
Kentucky
is one of them where they just want to be in the eastern time zone because
Kentucky is
more
to
people
be
live in the eastern and central.
Also, can we just not daylight savings?
Yes.
Because like unlike. Switching to metric or something like that, there's zero cost overhead. There's zero confusing switch over. You just 1 year, we all agree not to do it, and we're done.
I like waking up earlier than I normally do.
Like I don't care.
Just wake up earlier.
Like I said, I don't care.
Knock yourself out.
Which way we go, I just want to stop changing.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm just annoyed because I have a client that is in Arizona where they don't practice daylight savings, and so it's like it's always that week. It's like, oh yes, now I have to reschedule everything because while my meeting times didn't change, they changed because mm-hmm. we went into daylight savings.
Yeah, ditto. I've got some Arizona people I got to work with, and it's fucking dumb that I don't categorize them with the mountain people anymore. Or do I? Now I do. Before I didn't. I don't even fucking know.
You work with mountain people?
Yes. Trust me, I work with mountain people.
Like Appalachian? Dwarves or, like dwarves or storm giants? Or, yeah.
Or Appalachian?
Or Appalachian. No.
That's a whole different category than dwarves and storm giants.
Is it, though? How many Appalachians have you met? I guess dwarves and storm giants don't make buttermilk pie like those Appalachians do. That's but
very true.
Those are stone giants.
Yeah. Stoned giants.
Oh, yay.
So, Nathan, Dune board game reprint.
Yeah, interesting enough. Like,
I've never played it, but I've heard it's very similar. Just my layman's definition of it, it's very similar to like diplomacy, where there's not really like tokens or things really fully involved, but it's more of just kind of like a give take with all the players.
No. The one thing I will give it that is similar to diplomacy, because there's definitely lots of tokens involved, but there is no randomness. In Dune, there are no dice. Everything is mathematically there. The only randomness is the decks of cards, which are then secretly involved in combat. So even though you can see how many troops, tokens your guys have, you don't necessarily know what cards they have. So, and cards can be a really big deal.
Okay, and they can throw off the balance. Like basically, like if I'm going at you with like a 7-something versus 8-something, you would mathematically win, but I might have a card that'll give me X value.
What it boils down to, and it's really simple, so it's easy to quickly describe, is... So if I've got like 8 guys and you've got 7 guys, okay? We each secretly dial up to the number of guys we have, and that's our actual score. So if I dial 4 and you dial 5, you beat me, even though I have 8 guys.
Okay.
The number of guys is A, your limit. B, whatever the winner dials is how many of their guys die. So in that example, 5 of your 7 would die. As the loser, all 8 of mine would die.
Okay.
So that's combat. So you know I can dial up to 8. But I might not want to, because if I dial up to 8, then I'm in a weaker position. So maybe I'll try to get away with 4 so you can dial 5, or maybe you just dial 6 and cross your fingers. The second part is you have leaders, which have a set value from like 1 to 7, depending on your leaders, that are secretly added, and they have their face value.
Okay.
And then the cards that you have that are secret, they don't add any value to the combat. They just kill leaders.
Or protect leaders from being killed.
There are physical attacks and poisonous attacks, and there are physical defense and poisonous defense. So if you're like, I think Nathan has a poison, so I'll use my poison defense, and it turns out I had a gun and I shot you in your face, and so then all of a sudden your leader's gone and you lost that like +6, and you had dialed 3 + 6 because you knew that would be 9, which would beat my 8, blah, blah, blah. But again, there's no randomness. It's just more of a bluffing game.
Yeah. Sure.
Or then someone moves one guy into your territory, and you're like, well, shit, he's got a lasgun and a shield.
Allahu Akbar. Yeah, but yeah, no, I'm surprised because with the new film coming out, Gale Force 9 had gotten the rights to publish new Dune games. They were going to do RPG, they were going to do like a miniatures line maybe. They very specifically had not gotten rights for the old game, and I guess somewhere behind the scenes that changed.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if they have the rights to change it, but they have the rights to reprint it.
Isn't it Avalon? Who originally
it was Avalon Hill there was the Descartes edition and then Avalon Hill edition because there's the French one and so the thing that I'm most interested in is that the game, the rule book is not very cleanly written, so there is still, a la a GW game, there are still debates what the actual rules for Dune are, like 30 years later people still don't know how to play this game. 35
45?
Oh yeah, the 84. Well, because 84 was the edition that came out in America that was with the film.
Yep.
Yeah, it came out in 79 originally. I think in 76, whatever. So
that's
so
40.
Yeah, the point is, it's 40 years later, we still don't 100% know how to play Dune.
Even so, during this entire, do the makers die?
There are tournament.
Statistically, yes.
Statistically, yes. Also, there were several different makers. Also, they don't give a shit. It's just like, there's our game. Like, it's not like they're actively involved anymore. Like,
remember, Andy, they're French.
Yeah. There are set tournament rules that everybody agrees on, but they agree on it based on, it's rabbi style, where they interpret the Torah, and enough of them agree that this is God's word, so that's the law we're going to follow.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, Pagani was mentioning how, Dune is, from a game design perspective, potentially flawed. I mean, it shows that it's a 40-year-old game, but it is also the most thematic game I have ever played.
Yes. Oh, like, that's the thing. From a gameplay standpoint, with the exception of what they did with the Fremen move ship order, from a gameplay standpoint...
Arena Rex is probably
just a better game.
Yep.
But I don't give a shit because it feels like I'm just moving tokens, whereas Dune, I feel like I'm living Dune.
Yeah.
And not just because I'm a fan of Dune, but because it's so fucking thematic.
Yeah.
They're so good about it. Like, the Atreides and the Harkonnen hate each other. They despise each other in the mythology, and the game rules are designed as such that no matter who you put to play Atreides and play Harkonnen, they're gonna fucking hate each other. Their rules are such that they clash, and they cancel each other's powers out, and they're constantly not gonna trust each other. They're constantly gonna be poking each other, and that feels so fluffy.
Correct.
As compared to like a Game of Thrones game where suddenly you have people who normally don't even ally with each other to like, yeah, I won't attack you over there.
That's it. There's only one time I've ever seen Harkonnens and Atreides ally, and that was to make sure I couldn't get the Fremen victory condition off.
And it's hilarious because when the Atreides and the Harkonnen ally, they are really goddamn powerful, but they never want to ally because of the way their powers are.
Mm.
Like, the game does guide you to the thematic partnerships beautifully, but it doesn't make it mandatory. Whereas, like, the Game of Thrones you mentioned, like, I love that Game of Thrones board game.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel like Game of Thrones.
No.
Like, there's characters on these cards, but as a Stark, I don't feel like I hate
mean, everyone the walks away from the table not covered in blood, so.
Yeah, well, sure, but I don't feel like those entrenched hatreds and those entrenched alliances and family bloodlines going back 1,000 years, I don't feel them when I play that. I see tokens and tactical positioning.
It feels like Risk.
Sure, yeah.
Because Risk is just basically just colorless, just, you know, all Game of Thrones really is just colors in that regards.
Yeah. Quick answers for Miso Miso. Have you guys ever, I think that's supposed to be ever, had a game of Axis and Allies or Twilight Imperium? They're both epic legendary games. Yes, I have played, I think, 9 different Twilight Imperiums at this level. Most are good in their own ways. They all share the same flaw where you lose from a mistake you made 3 hours earlier, but you don't know that that mistake's going to fuck you until 3 hours later because the game is very slow motion. And then he says Twilight Imperium is a day of play. Not true anymore. TI4 you can play in like 4 hours. It is pretty quick.
You meant Axis and Allies.
I meant Axis and Allies, sorry.
You lose from a mistake that you made 3 hours
before. Did I say
Twilight
Imperium? I meant Axis and Allies.
I mean, it's still somewhat true.
It's so much true. No, TI you'll find out right away. TI you'll do something and you'll be like, oh, Mechatol blew up. There goes all my fleets. Fuck.
Well, I mean, it depends. Is it a Jeremy style? I'm going to stab Brian in the back turn one.
Axis and Allies, you'll build a fighter instead of 4 infantry. And that fucks you, but you don't know until 4 hours later when it comes up in a battle.
Unless you can roll lots of ones.
Right. So, but I do love Axis and Allies for its own ways. They're all different in their own ways. I really like there's a World War I one that's extremely different than the other ones that I really like. And then there's also a D-Day one that's quicker.
The D-Day one was interesting. It just did not feel like Axis and Allies.
Yeah, I can see that. The Battle of the Bulge one is garbage. Never play the Battle of the Bulge one. It is really, really stupid. Because the way, like, if you attack somebody, you'd have your battle board. Instead of, like, hitting on, you know, these hit on ones and these two or whatever, so let's say I have 20 things and I attack Dan's 2 things. He puts them on, and you, like, stack them on odd stacks and even stacks. So you put one guy each on the 2 stacks, and then all my stuff would attack. And so, like, if something hits on, like, a 1 through 4... If I attack with 10 of them and they all hits with 1s and 3s, they will only kill the things on the odd stack. So I could get 50 hits and only kill one of his 2 guys because the game's terrible.
Nuts.
I don't like those type. Like Axis and Allies, I know you kind of know how it's supposed to go because we live in the world that it ended where the Allies won.
Take that.
Take that, Pat. Oh, that's not good.
Is it okay?
It's okay.
Hooray.
But like Battle of the Bulge, we pretty much know how that goes. So I don't like playing scenarios in that regards.
Sure.
Because it just doesn't feel right. It's like, I don't know. That's probably why I'm never going to be when I get turn 50, I'm not going to graduate to like Napoleonic
war games.
Yeah. War games, because just playing those type of scenarios, it doesn't.
I mean, it's fine, Andy. The shots they give you for Social Security will fix that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Be a hipster. Only play Boer War based miniatures.
Hey, that would be actually quite fun.
Yeah, actually. The Boer War was my dad's favorite classic war, just because, you know, hipstery.
I mean, it's fine. There's concentration camps, but they're mostly white people.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Good old Europe sure did treat Africa well, didn't we? Required to try anniversary of Axis and Allies. That's meant to go. Yeah, Anniversary Edition is solid. It introduces Italy as a separate playable sixth faction. It's they've all got their individual money.
Does it disappear right away?
I'll say which side is it on.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. Oh, my goodness. So related to what side it's on, and I know I tell this anecdote a lot, but I don't think I've ever told it on air, but it's topical because the Ring Game is coming up, which Ring Game is a thing here in the Madison area.
You watch television, and then 7 days later, something comes and kills you.
No, correct. That's the election. That's next.
Ring Game is like a several hundred people game of capture the flag. Sure. Played in a state park, but it is Lord of the Rings themed. And okay. So you have the free people and the forces of darkness, and there's the hobbits, and they have to take the ring and get it to Mount Doom and dunk it in Mount Doom, and then the free people win, or the shadow forces have to find the ring bearer and retrieve the ring, and then the shadow people.
Sure, but the hobbit people are all like 3 feet tall. You just pick them up and you win.
Sure. Well, yeah. So there's all kinds of rules and stuff like that.
I'm the eagles.
But so here's the thing that happened is there was one year where... the ring bearer took the ring and he hid it in the backpack of a different hobbit without telling that hobbit.
Okay.
Okay? And then they split up and went separate ways. Arc Circle, sign up. Just Google Ring Game. I think the sign up's online. And you can just show up, and if you don't know how to play, they'll just make you like an orc or a dwarf and you'll have no special rules. Like the people who, there's extra rules for being like a wizard or being like one of the fellowship where they have extra powers, but just being like an orc. Because all this is like when you're a group, you just go, you see another group, you go, combat. And then you like count up how many people, and then the bigger team wins, and the other team has to like sit down for 5 minutes or something. Like it's whatever.
Do they play this in the Arboretum? That would be.
No, they played Governor Dodge State Park, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's outdoors. It's a lot of fun. We could do it. But anyway, so one of the hobbits stuffed the ring into the backpack of another hobbit without telling him. I'll just say Sam gave it to Frodo. Okay, just freeze. So then they split up and go their ways, and some orcs captured Frodo. And they're like, all right, do you have the ring? If so, we win. And Frodo's like, no, I don't have the ring. Because he thought he didn't have the ring. So he like sat down for 5 minutes. He was prisoner. Then he got rescued, whatever. And then he meets back up with Sam later, and Sam's like, hey, check it. I got the ring. It was in your backpack. Let's go dunk it. So they go dunk it, and free people win. So then the shadow players are like, bullshit, we captured that guy. We should have won. And so the people in charge of the game said, you know what? Everybody wins. Free people, you win because you dunked the ring. Shadow people, you win because you got it. High fives all around. Everybody happy. To which a very sad Radagast spoke up. Because Radagast the Brown, as people familiar with the books might know, he could have gone either way with his loyalty. So he starts the game as a free person, and then he can switch to shadow if he wants to. And he had elected to do so after Frodo was captured. So everybody won the game except for Radagast, who lost twice. It's just like, fuck you, Brown Coat. Get out.
We're not talking about the Firefly fans. Either.
Nope. I just love that. Everyone wins except Radagast, who loses twice. Good times.
Yeah. Awkward silence.
Yeah. Nope.
We had a conversation.
Oh, Twilight Imperium, good stuff. Fourth edition plays a lot faster than the previous editions. Next Allies, good stuff. Dune, good stuff.
We've played it a few times.
I once went to a friend's bachelor party where we went to the chalet in the Smoky Mountains and played Twilight Imperium for 12 hours straight. I won.
So third edition, you played
just one game.
Yeah. Well, if it was third edition, you played once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Twilight Imperium is one of those games where I have loved every edition, and every edition has made it entirely irrelevant to ever play a previous edition. Yeah. It is nothing but improvement every time.
Correct.
Speaking of which, who's bringing the copy this year?
I'll bring it.
Okay. Yeah.
Now this was one of my greatest board game accomplishments because we had thought it was a tie, and then after we drove back home, the guy whose bachelor party it was emailed the group and said, no, Dave won. And I said, because we should have counted victory points in initiative order, and he had a higher initiative.
Speaking of, yes, you do victory points in initiative order. At War Machine Weekend, we broke the goddamn game. Because you count victory points in initiative order, but the...
That's right. There's one thing that
isn't. The politics phase, at the start of the politics phase, you return all your initiative cards. There is no initiative order in the politics phase. During the politics phase, we passed a law that said everybody gets a victory point, and there were people tied at one below where you need to win the game. And there was no clarification of what order to give them their victory points.
Yeah.
And the game doesn't have tiebreakers because it's not supposed to come up. You're supposed to do everything in victory point order.
That's right. I do remember the frantic 20 minutes of Board Game Geek Googling to try and figure out what the hell happened.
Like, do we go clockwise from speaker token?
I think that's what we
ended up doing because there's nothing else.
Yeah, because remember, because that was right after Josh...
What actually ended up happening?
Switched the speaker.
What actually ended up happening is we did all this, and somebody was like, "Fine, fuck it, I veto the law because I'm tired of us trying to figure it out." And then we played for another 20 minutes, and somebody won the game. But
I was gonna say, couldn't you also just go and one more point? Couldn't you just go one more point?
No, because of 10? I was one of the three people who was going to win, and my entire strategy for the last two turns was burn my entire force down so I could get to 10.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, and that's
like,
what,
getting to 11 was functionally impossible for me because I had zero, and Josh was the same
way. Which
is
why, once that law was vetoed, you were not one of the people in the running to then actually get to 10.
Correct.
Travis asks, if I am going to Adepticon, I may try to stop in for a little bit on one of the days, but I am just getting back from taking the kids for spring break, so I am uncertain right now.
I am driving down Thursday evening.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I do have to work Thursday because I have to be in a meeting. I have to be in a meeting at work. So I can't leave until Thursday at like 5:30. So I'll be there like 7-ish, I think. Yeah. And then I'll be there Friday, Saturday, and some portion of Sunday. Yeah. True story.
Yeah. I'll be there all four.
Problem, Andy?
Whoa.
What?
I made a question for today.
Yeah, there's a lot of answers.
There's a lot of answers.
There's a point where we can just switch to that topic because it has a lot of questions. Also,
just a lot of
to answer a redacted Zappity Grumble, because how dare you redact it? I'm going to answer.
I'm going to answer it.
Good ramen is better than a good curry. I love curry, but I have an addiction to broths. You give me just some earthy umami, just whether it be some kind of wonton soup, ramen, pho, banh bo, what's the other Vietnamese soup that's not pho? I can never pronounce it correctly, but that shit's amazing. Any kind of just brothy, translucent brown soup with a sheen of oil floating on top, yes, yes.
Whereas I will go with curry over that just because I like the variety in curry more than broth soups, even though
I think I like broth more
there's
than curry.
Lamb vindaloo, hot, and that's all the curries there are.
I mean, you're wrong.
Why would you eat other curries when you can have lamb vindaloo?
Because I like for my heartburn to come from multiple sources.
Can you define curry here? Because this is one of those amorphous
Indian
words.
Indian stir fry.
Okay.
Also, more importantly, it's because we live in the Midwest, so lamb is spotty.
Yeah, that is true. But I was, because the question actually said a really good curry or a really good ramen. We're not talking top. The 25-cent ramen packets that you get at Woodman's in a 20-pack.
I'll take curry.
What the hell are you paying 25
cents
for ramen
any day of the week?
15-cent ramen, you're right.
Yeah, you can get the expensive ramen there?
Yeah, the stuff that has an actual veggie packet in addition to the sauce packet.
Those are worse.
Yeah, I know.
But no, I will take the curry horrible. Any day of the week because I can subsist on butter chicken.
Sure. Raylene loves the panini, the cheese cube, with the really light sauce, like the orange creamy sauce.
Yeah, paneer masala.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not the masala. She likes the one with the different sauce. I'm trying to remember which paneer she likes.
Paneer
masala is fine. Masala sauce is good, and paneer is a good thing.
The green one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, sog paneer.
Yeah. That fucking carrot paste dessert, so good.
Mango.
I made that from scratch. For Friendsgiving at the Christensen's house a couple years ago. That's so good. Like, you just start with carrots and you end up with this just decadent brick of just sugar and love. But still, ramen. Pho.
Pho you.
Thank you.
I love... The only reason why I love pho is all of the restaurants that play on that name.
Fucking pho, yeah.
Into their restaurants. It's the best.
Yeah, and then there's Japanese curry.
What?
What is... I actually have never tried it.
Japanese curry is a Japanese interpretation of a British interpretation of curry. It's amazing.
Sure, so it's like Tex-Mex kind of thing where it's not actually what it should be, but it's... Yeah.
And it's amazing because you have it with rice and breaded pork.
No. It's all wrong.
But it works.
Curry's so good, though.
It's also one of those things that almost everyone agrees that you can make it from home, but don't. Just
Amber
buy the curry
Middleton.
Cubes.
Yep. Amber and Middleton. Swagot. It's so good.
I'll take Swagot over Ember.
No.
Ember's okay.
Because...
Swagot, like from Street Fighter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Swagot, because he likes his swag.
Yeah.
No, because Maharaj on Odanna Road used to be the best, and then the guy who opened Amber stole their chef, and correct. That's why Amber's so good.
And then Maharaj got bad.
Yeah, they did.
And then they flooded.
Did they? Is that, are they closed now? Like yes. I saw. Yeah. Is because it from the flooding?
It is.
But I was there once, and it was just not good. I mean, Maharani.
It was good like a decade ago, but yeah. That was before Amber.
Yeah,
like
say, back in the good old days when Maharaja knew me by name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is never really a good thing when a restaurant, and everyone in the restaurant knows your first name.
Maharani downtown is really good, but Swagat's my favorite.
The nice thing about an Indian restaurant knowing you by name when you're a gringo is that they start to finally understand that you actually do know how hot the stuff's supposed to be and you're okay with things being the proper spiciness. Yeah. Like, I felt so reverse racist against when I asked for some spicy stuff at a restaurant and they gave me, like, it was like mayonnaise. Like, there was no spice. I'm like, listen, I understand that I'm a honky. Please make me cry.
Yeah. Now, that was like one of my favorite Indian place when I lived in Kentucky called the Curry House. I went there one time. They're like, oh, on a scale of 1 to 5, how spicy do you want it? And so I'd normally get it at 5.
Oh, you go 5, yeah.
And then at one point, because I mean, this was white people 5. And so
oh,
I was
sure,
like,
exactly.
So I was like, yeah, can I get like a 6? And it's like what if it's like if it's.
Give me a white 6.
Well, because what yeah. It is the scale is 1 to 10, but they only tell the white people about 1 to 5. And it's like, yeah. I want an 8. I legit want an 8. Please give me spicy, but not stupid, overpowering hot so I can't taste the flavor hot. And then you're like, here's a gringo 4. And you're like, this is, you gave me a bowl of water. Why did you give me a bowl of water?
But so they gave me a 6. And like in the middle of the meal, the chef comes out to check on me to make sure I'm okay.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah. Everyone's on their phones.
I was double checking. Yeah. It's not really a question, though, but just some subjects about.
I love Indian food.
But I have 2 recommendations this week because we skipped a week.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, like, what we were talking about, like, if you think if there's something that you would want to change about War Machine Hordes, it doesn't have to be. I specifically asked not to be faction specific because we don't want to talk about factions, what's OP, what's not OP, but actually, like, core rules.
Well, because at that gaming thing that's not MAGA, but it's like Gamma or something. Gamma. They had the screenshot where they were talking about how they're going to have like a polished up like new
rules,
which people are thinking might just be like a collection of errata or whatever. But as long as that's a thing that's coming, let's spitball. What would you would like to see in the game?
Okay, this is one of the things that bugs me about War Machine. So you have the rule set defense. Set defense represents you have dudes with spears that they set it to protect
set it
against
and
against
forget
charge.
It.
Yeah, so
just like us.
Traditional
Ron Popeil.
Yeah, I mean, chicken.
So I mean traditionally what you set spears for is a cavalry charge, right?
Yeah, when Golgotha, the hill that Christ died on, is stampeding towards you, you need to put those spears in the ground to defend yourself from that cavalry charge.
Cavalry. Yeah.
Yes, when cavalry is charging at you, you need to put the spears up.
Yes, so you traditionally
that is a fucking mental image. Like, the whole hill. It isn't just that Jesus and the thief and that third guy are, like, coming towards you. It's just the hill moving, like, the Crimson Permanent Insurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have a cavalry charge. So you have a cavalry charge, and you set your spears to defend yourself from a cavalry charge, and it bugs me that a cavalry charge gets
cavalry.
Cavalry. Horses. Fucking horses.
Horses. Fucking horses. What we all like to see.
That's a weird centaur.
So. So you set your spears to protect yourself from the fucking horse charge.
Yeah.
And
I would, man. If that fucking horse is coming at me, I'm getting my spear out.
And
what kind of card is the horse charging with?
And the set defense gives you a +2, but the fucking horse gets a boosted die. That bugs me just on a very deep level. It just scratches
is the thing most able to overcome.
So that the fucking horse is charging you, their bonus is greater than the bonus you get against their charge.
Only 66%
stop.
Of the time
stop
could you no no could
stop
you
stop talking
Well, no,
no, it's true.
Here's an idea. I mean, could you
11%?
Yeah. Could you make it so somebody with a horse,
or horse
doesn't get the extra die to hit
set
against models
would need a
with
second
set defense.
Sentence. Set defense would have to be +2 defense against the charge. Cavalry models charging this model do not get the boost.
Yeah, if you add that, or just say that like cavalry give you a defensive strike against charging horses or something like that. But it just bugs me on a very basic level that set defense is worse than the cavalry charge bonus.
I just think that like if that horse is coming at you with its turgid dick just out and ready to fuck, you're gonna not be holding the spear like to your most effective just because of the raw primal terror.
That. Everything should have 2 inches reach then.
I mean, maybe
for
this
horses,
is,
that is.
Maybe this is why War Machine horses have horse cocks obsessively modeled on them.
Yeah, well, you know, only like half of them. Some people ride mares.
And by some people, you mean Ulans.
Yeah. What about, I don't think the poor soul hunters don't have dicks. The only ones that aren't riding horses but are the horses.
Well, that's why they can't make more soul hunters.
Sure. Crix has to sew them together.
Yep.
It's a dug, right? The creature on the front half of a soul hunter? Travis is in chat. He knows all this shit.
You mean the...
Because soul hunters are like centaurs, basically. Yep. The thing on the front is not a human. Like, if you look at their face, they got, like, the Beta Ray Bill horse face thing going on. And that creature is a war machine. It is an Iron Kingdom's creature, and I think it's called a dug.
As in Doug Funny?
No, like D-U-G.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant
potentially D-U-U-G.
Or D-U-U-G or something like that. I could be misremembered, but it's something very like single syllable like that. And they're just like kind of like the kobolds, kind of like one of those like crappy humanoid lives in caves and doesn't have pants kind of shitty.
Okay, then I want to know who the Crix mastermind thought is like, we should attach that stupid little kobold thing to a horse.
I mean, probably just a fuckload of them just crawling around in the mud. Like, it's just convenience.
Also, when you've been dead 4,000 years, you come up with really interesting ideas to keep, you know, your mind working.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or you've sewn together so many things in that time period. Like, I guess this works.
Fuck it. What else is in the bin?
Give them a couple sighs and get them out there.
Waste not, want not. If you look at a centaur and think what's left over, you basically just have human legs with a horse head stuck on top and no torso.
Yeah.
So, like, you know,
I mean, that's
send those out to battle.
Yeah, that's what scrap thralls are.
Yeah.
Isn't that what satyrs are, basically?
No, they have torsos.
That's torsos.
And those are goats.
And arms. Like, it literally would be just human waist down, and then the waist goes immediately into a horse neck. Because if you look at a centaur, it has the entire horse except for neck and up.
Yeah.
And it has all the human from waist up. The leftover bits are human from the waist and then just a horse head stuck on top, to waist.
You might have like a little of the waist.
I mean, human rib cage is there and belly button. Centaurs have a belly button up there. So it is literally waistband and up is on there. So you just got human from the waist down and then a horse head just stuck on top, just scurrying around shrieking.
Maybe it's a different region, centaur.
How would it shriek? It doesn't have lungs.
As vocal chambers, and you just, I don't know.
You could put
it's
lungs in
the
thighs.
Yeah. You just like
imply. Giant fart.
Yeah. You build it that way. It's got an anus. You could like have wind blow up inside of it. I don't know. Just, it's magic.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah, just like a bagpipe.
A wizard made it shriek. Yeah. Just sew a bagpipe inside of there. Yeah. And as it runs, it's just squeezing the bagpipe.
I think I just invented a new nightmare.
Really, with that thing in the game, they'd have to reintroduce command checks.
Oh, that could be a new Inferno.
I say, for the models or the players?
Yes.
Okay.
¿Por qué no los dos?
Okay, I've got a few more things. It's like if we're talking about War Machine issues that could be fixed with a streamlining of the rules, especially because they've talked about new theme forces. Every theme in War Machine says if you take X points of these models, you get one of a selection.
Yeah, take X points, get Y.
And there is no game term for either the X models or the Y models, and it annoys me that there isn't.
What do you mean a game term?
He wants the theme force to have like core in the description
models.
say
you want tier benefits.
No, he doesn't want an actual change to the rule. He just wants the thing to say
they want
instead
labels.
Of saying. For every 20 points of Winter Guard Infantry. Mm-hmm. He wants a little box that says core models and says Winter Guard Infantry and bonus models and says Winter Guard Solos, and so that every theme force could just say, for every 20 points of core, get one bonus model free. And they could streamline the verbiage and just have a category. Am I hearing you right?
Yes. Yeah. They could streamline the verbiage. Another thing that they really need to fix is the rules around what end of activation means are dumb. Because the distinction between what happens at end of activation and when your activation immediately ends, that it is unnecessarily confusing.
Well, there should be a defined end of activation. Yes.
Or just have a you should. All you have to do is post a timeline.
Well,
Travis and I think this was the thing he and I talked about where that was like the one thing in the Mark III book is not like 100% spelled out is the end of the unit's activation.
This is
each trooper's activation ending versus the unit's activation.
Well, just
ending?
In general, yeah, sure. Because you get into that weird thing where a run immediately ends, but what things still trigger?
Yeah,
my miso.
My suggestion for that is that you add a reform action that that you by default you don't get to do anything, but stuff like reposition happens during your reform action, and then
reform phase.
And so that stuff happens during your reform phase, and then say that if you run or you fail a charge, you skip your reform phase.
Yeah. So I mean, it's just basically adding a timeline, everything else.
Yeah. Well, and it also gets around. Sure. I know in Mark II,
things that cause your activation to immediately end, you don't get end of activation things.
Yeah.
Is the point?
Yeah, and that's poorly written. Poorly
but what
rules.
Is on, yeah, because I remember in Mark II, the trick you could do with Veil 2 was with Refuge, it never said your activation immediately ended after Refuge. So you could do the thing where you could Refuge, move Veil, and then repulse stuff, or occasionally repulse stuff twice because of that.
Sure.
They fixed it with a different way in Mark III, but stuff like that where it's just fuzzy.
And also, I really do not like the way you use spray bullshit to get around shooting protections, and the fact that sprays are just better than
Shield Guard. No longer working on sprays.
Shield Guard doesn't work on sprays.
That annoys me.
The fact that you can hit stuff you can't target, that is impossible to target with sprays.
Only in some situations.
Well, I mean, it's the way. I mean,
well, like terrain still blocks it, right?
Yeah,
some terrain. Yep.
Because a forest stops a shotgun blast, a cloud doesn't.
Correct.
And that's the thing. I don't mind being able to hit things you can't target, because if you shoot a shotgun blast into a cloud, you'll hit someone who is there that you didn't see.
Oh, I'm not even talking about the cloud specifically, but it's just the fact that if you have spell immune, that it's like I can hit you with I can blow you away even though I can't target you with a cone of cold, because I'm targeting the thing on the other side of the board and just happen to hit you with it.
Sure.
And that's, I mean, this is, to me, that is, I mean, it, in it, people will defend it and say that it adds a level of tactical complexity to the game.
No, I think that one's
gamey.
In there solely because it saves about a page of rules.
Yeah, it's gamey. I mean, I think it would be better if the things that said you can't target would just say, would be better. It's like if you automatically missed.
But there are some abilities that do say that, and so that is a distinction that's in the game. So you don't need new rules written. You just think that some of those abilities should be
Some of the abilities should be set, and just sprays in general. In my opinion,
sprays should have more
are far too superior as compared to normal shooting attacks, and even to blast damage. Because there's so much stuff that ignores blast damage, and there's nothing really that stops sprays other than the one model in Infernals now. And I think that's it off the top of my head.
My standard go-to three that they have been for a long time. Because since I like single-handedly got so many other things fixed from the change from Mark II to Mark III, and you can't prove otherwise, I am going to go with my go-to three. Which is that pigs should not have to force to use their dial, because the freebooter doesn't have to spend a focus to use its dial anymore, so fuck you.
Yeah.
Shooting should work like casting a spell, where you can do it while engaging, as long as you aren't engaged, because why can't Durgan Madhammer put his hammer away long enough to shoot a bitch? And number three, Jack Marshall should be able to use their Marshall bonus point to shake. Because now that is the big drawback of Jack Marshalls, and if Privateer Press added that rule, they would sell a fuckload of Jack Marshalls.
They should also be able to use their Jack Marshall to kick out spiritual things that are in the Jacks. such as like the
machine wraith.
One they changed the machine wraith.
They changed machine wraith. So
machine wraith. Oh, that is different. Yep, I haven't actually played with the machine wraith.
Like Mark II, machine wraith is no longer a thing anyway. So that's not as necessary.
I do miss showing the card to machine wraith to my opponent quick and saying, "See this paragraph. If you don't want to read it, never end your Jack with an 8."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marshall Jack just literally could never be brought back, and it was just absurd.
Yep. Also, throws should scatter in general more, and I say that as somebody that has...
As the Prince of Throws?
As the as somebody that has forced everyone in the Madison meta to understand the throw mechanic, because I will abuse the shit
that
out
is
of
true.
Laser accurate
I forgot
accurate
about
throws.
That, but throws are too accurate.
Yeah.
Well, throws that are technically out of range too accurate.
Yeah,
I mean, it's basically. Currently, if you are,
if I throw at you, I'll miss. If I throw at the guy behind you, I'm guaranteed to hit you.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Currently, the way to set up it, and a lot of this is done for streamlining, is that throws only scatter if you target something with them, and you are within range of it, and you roll to hit, and you miss. That basically you have to roll to hit, and you have to miss. And if that doesn't happen, the throw doesn't deviate, so it's laser accurate. And when you're doing something abusive like me, like playing Harkovich, where I have four two-handed throwing models in a list, or playing Kruger 2 and having complete control over where models go, mm-hmm. that you just use those as laser accurate throws and do a lot of bullshit on them. Like at one team tournament in Iowa, I told the guy, it's like, okay, I'm going to kill your caster. And it's like, how? And it's like, because I'm going to throw this guy at your caster. It's going to be laser accurate, and then with least displacement, your caster is going to pop in front of the wall he's hiding behind and be knocked down and then die.
That's all good.
Yeah.
A cleanup on least displacement as well would be solid.
That one I don't even think the rules have to change. I just think they need someone who doesn't play the game to write that paragraph.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rules could be streamlined for least displacement. I don't think ultimately least displacement is that much of an issue.
No.
No, it's just like I said, no one understands what it means.
But I mean throws are abusable in a gamey manner. And when I say gamey, I mean something is like, yes, there is an extreme depth of skill to properly abusing throw mechanics.
Oh, I thought they just tasted like venison.
But they taste like venison. But I mean, it's just that it's at that point you are playing the game system and not playing the game, because you're doing stuff that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of trying to pretend the fantasy of it. It doesn't line up, because you're doing stuff that should be really, really coarse and hard to predict, but you can do it with laser accuracy as long as you...
Why the fuck are his shoulders and like the side of his body?
He's a car man.
His head's too far back, and then
All right. So still, I discussed this with
still best prime.
Oh
well, the only one that didn't die like a chump. How many times
like
did Optimus Prime? Yeah. How many times did Optimus Prime kill Unicron? Oh, was it zero?
I mean, Optimus
how
Prime
many times
also
did
Rodimus
die like a bitch.
Yeah.
Zero.
And then there was a time Megatron like stole his power.
Yeah. That's okay.
So I had already discussed this with Dan and Dave earlier, but the change that I would like to see is a change to how terrain affects all models.
Difficult terrain.
Difficult terrain specifically, because it fucking sucks as a judge to go and place down a proxy base and then sit there with a laser pointer pointing to the proxy base to the original model and then measuring out how much actual terrain you go through, multiply it times 2, then minus it off of your actual speed and figure out how far your fucking guy can walk through that little tidbit of forest. So what I would like to do, stealing from a different game system, but would be to make all small models just have a static -3 speed, -3 inches to their movement while moving through difficult terrain, medium base, -2, large base, -1, and then huge bases wouldn't have any penalty movement over difficult terrain.
So what happens if you're a small base and you enter a forest with 2.5 inches of movement left?
Then you just stop. You stop as soon as you hit that forest.
Oh.
With pre-measuring, you'll be able to figure out if you would end up at the end of that forest or not.
I mean, I'm broadly on board with the saying it with simplifying the terrain, that it's like you it's either make it more binary, that either you hit difficult terrain and you get a flat penalty, or as opposed to trying to measure it out, which is one of the more difficult things in the game to adjudicate.
It's annoying.
Fairly. I think you need more than a 1-inch penalty for large bases, because that kind of makes Pathfinder obsolete in a lot of cases.
It used to be bad, but don't you just use two? You put down a proxy when they meet the forest and say, all right, this is 2 inches and a quarter. And then you put a proxy down on the other side of the forest and you measure and say, okay, that was 2 more inches, double to 4. You've used 6 1/4. And but then keep going.
So the problem is, Nathan, most people are bad at math.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then if you're like clipping a forest, you know.
Sure. I mean, all you need is 2 proxy bases, right? No. And you just line them up. You're here. This is the last point where the front of this base hits the forest. And this is where the back of the base is exiting the forest. And so you just measure that and double that second measurement.
I mean, it is better than Mark II. You are correct.
Yeah. Mark II was a nightmare to do that. Yep. But now it's just boom, boom. Mark I was the worst because you didn't bother measuring. You just said, you hit the forest there, go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was not okay.
Maybe I just need to cut a widget for measuring difficult terrain.
I'm just sitting there trying to do basically math.
Yeah, in the middle of the game. I just don't mind math, so for me it's never been an issue.
It's annoying for me. Because then you have people who are sitting there trying to like guess over like how far does he actually move in a game where it's very, very precise.
Well, then the other thing is...
But that's what the two proxies, because then there's no... Like, before proxy bases and shit like that, it was a lot harder. Now you just put down 2 bases, and you can just measure and say that's 2.5 inches, and now the rest of this is through the terrain, and that's 4 inches, doubled to 8, boom, 10.5 inches.
The problem was when it doesn't cleanly divide, and all of a sudden you're like, where's your quarter-inch widget?
I mean, you have a tape measure. That's where your quarter-inch widget is.
Sure, and then is your tape measure edge correct?
Or? I mean, there's a point where that...
I have unfortunately gotten to arguments about
that. Yeah, somebody, find out that the model is actually moving 1.8 inches through the forest, and then you're trying to figure out how far is that. You know, I know it's 3.6 inches.
Well, your tape measure doesn't do 1.8. Your tape measure does 1 in 9/16.
I mean, ultimately, this is... This isn't an unsolvable problem, but it's something that I think causes more judge calls in competitive games.
I understand it. Yes. I understand Andy's point. I understand the benefits of it. As someone who doesn't think the math is difficult, but that's because I am more math inclined than most people, I don't see that. But I understand why other people aren't me.
Yep, I don't do math.
Also,
I do all the math.
Arctic Circle is saying, do you have to be completely within?
I do not have good teeth.
You don't have meth teeth. Uh-huh.
I think I am missing half of 70% of my teeth.
Sure. You have teeth.
Yeah. No. I wonder how many whole teeth I have. I honestly don't know how many of my teeth are actually all the way there.
Sure. You don't have meth teeth because you can't answer
you mean
that question.
W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E.
Well, both. Okay. Like, one or the other, right? If 20% of them have holes, the 80% of them are whole, but that's definitely not. It's like, yeah. I think like 8 of my teeth aren't
until
half gone.
So we all know you can't whistle. We've done that episode where we found out you cannot whistle, but the time that you actually start whistling,
I can whistle, but I have to use my tongue on the back of my teeth. There's people who claim you use your lips are lying pieces of shit. Your lips are not involved in whistling. All you do is go. No, you're a liar. So. Yeah, I think, I got like 3 molars and then like the front 4 teeth. Yeah. I need to show my dental records to the listeners.
Sure, it's still not meth teeth.
It is not meth teeth.
It just looks like...
You know,
there's
you
not
remember
four
in Ren
them.
And Stimpy when like Ren would like get hit by a hammer and they'd show that close up of just like jagged things with a nerve hanging off of one of them?
Yeah, that's like the best episode ever.
Yeah, that's
when they pull out the nerve endings and leave it for the nerve ending fairy.
Yep.
Oh.
Also,
so are you Ren then in bed just sitting there grinding your teeth?
I mean, that's a question for him and Rayleigh.
Yeah, don't kink shame.
Not kink shaming, I'm just confused.
Yeah. Volcano is boss.
Also, for terrain, it shouldn't be based on completely within. It should be based on line. It should be based on line of sight. That if you you should get concealment from something if somebody drawing line of sight to you cannot draw a line of sight that doesn't pass through the concealment granting terrain. Because this is one of the other things that is dumb about the game, that if you have a model that is behind a forest, if you're completely behind the forest, you're invincible because they can't see through the forest. If you step inside the forest, you get absolutely no benefit
once you get all the way to the forest,
you get plus two defense.
And clouds are actually even worse.
Yeah. So you go from untargetable to no benefit to plus two defense.
Yeah. So I think that should just be done. That it's a line of sight, similarly to the way walls work. Or kind of the other way around. That saying that if you cannot draw a line of sight that doesn't pass through the forest, then you get concealment.
So then what do hills do?
Same thing.
Fuck hills.
I mean, valid
point.
I would say you would have to. But the point is, like, if this is a hill, any model that's on the side of the hill closer to the attacker should get like no benefit, right? Like, or should you have cover if you're on the other half because the hill's physically in the
way?
All
hills need a line down the center.
Because there's elevation benefit. If you're on the back half of the hill,
you get cover. If you're on the front half of the hill, you get minus two.
I would do the same thing defensively.
Minus two to defense. It's easier to shoot somebody coming down the hill.
Well, yeah, they're just like, hey, look, I'm on a hill.
Oh, yeah, and they can't slow down. They're like, whoa!
But I would do,
you get plus to your movement, too?
Yeah.
Okay.
God, I remember, as a kid, you'd be plus running down a hill and you couldn't stop, and you'd be like, oh, God!
Do you remember?
Then it's not always easier downhill.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you could play Signar and you could put your long gunners on the hill and then a person couldn't charge you because there was like an inch lip on the hill?
I sure remember.
For design purposes?
Because in Mark 1, it was still arguable that GW was better.
No.
When one of the main people who was one of the first players of War Machine here locally played Signar, so he declared all hills. Because you know how the hills that like Brian Giese would make have the straight edge to make them easier to use in the game? This guy would claim that meant they were all ziggurats, which like, meant that was an obstacle. And so if you tried to charge up them, moving up them took an extra inch, and you couldn't charge up them because in Mark 1, if you tried to charge and you hit rough terrain, you immediately stop moving.
Yeah.
So his long gunners would just shoot at you from on top of this impenetrable ziggurat.
Oh, that asshole?
Yeah, that asshole. Who also said nobody could bring Haley because there was a...
Alexia.
Iris.
Oh, no, Iris.
Iris. I said there was a gentleman's agreement not to bring Iris to games. And that was because he didn't tech against her.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was... Anybody before I came... Because Andy and Brian and everybody were playing and Misty on the east side, so I started on the west side here, and it was me, him, his friend, who will also be nameless, and just a couple other scragglers, and it was basically them terrifying people away until I passed the press gang test. I'm like, all right, I'm the boss now. Shut up.
Yeah.
We're bringing Iris. These are hills. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, the hill thing was really stupid. I mean... I would have agreed with it, but the fact that he was playing Signar and basically
it was
using...
so transparent that he was just doing it to his benefit.
Yeah.
I have no problem playing with different terrain, including using ziggurats. That can be interesting. Mm-hmm. Having obstacles that, you know, it take not everything's a smooth hill. That's interesting. But he had every single hill just flat be used by that because it was to his benefit.
Yep.
I also watched him try to teach somebody the game once, and the first thing he mentioned, like they sat down... and he was going to do a demo, and he said, all right, so let me explain that you can have your warjack spend a focus to charge, which gives them plus 3 inches to movement and a boosted an additional die on their damage roll. He had not explained moving or attacking or focus or anything. So he starts with combining 7 core concepts of the game.
My favorite, I think, is one of his students.
By the way, this is not Mr. Malorian we're bashing this time. This is a non-active person, so correct. I feel no guilt this time.
But I remember, I think it was a couple of his students, but they were playing War Machine, but they were going through a movement phase, a shooting phase, a melee
everything
phase.
Everything moves, everything shoots, everything, yeah.
Yeah. So they're basically 40K. Playing War Machine.
40K.
Yeah, 40K, yep. Which might be an interesting way to play the game if you'd actually have...
Actually, no, we'll call it G War Machine.
No, I mean, could it be? It might be interesting to at least try it.
Feats immediately break.
Feats break. And think about, like with your support models, like choir and stuff like that. Like, it's so important to, yeah, to have.
Well,
the phasing.
I mean, the bigger problem
no,
is
that
like
could be during the magic phase when the choir activates.
Okay. So, like, giving Pathfinder to something after the movement phase happened?
Yeah. I don't see a problem.
Sure. Bye.
What did I hit?
He hit a chair that hit a frame that hit a box. And then the green grass grows all around and around, and the green grass grows all around.
And high tides?
Hot dogs. I like hot dogs.
Blood.
Oh, speaking of
makes
Portillo's
the green grass grow. That's what I learned in the military.
Yeah, Portillo's.
Portillo's is open, but I have busy. Driven by there like three times, and I was like, I'm not going to park.
It was only a 20-minute line inside.
Raylene and I drove to go there, and it looked busy, so we went and used up my Texas Roadhouse gift card instead, and we got to see a sad yeehaw. Well, it's always worth the sad yeehaw.
Did you force Texas the sad yeehaw? Or
nope.
Just
it happened across the room. I will say, that Texas Roadhouse, their brandy old-fashioned work. I had one. I'm like, that was delicious. I had a second. I'm like, whoa.
Raylene, you drive.
Yeah, I told him, like, I'll be fine because we're staying for dessert, but good times.
I like Texas Roadhouse. I mean, that was because
pray for death.
You talked about that before.
I did. Mm-hmm. I was so excited to see it in person again after talking about it. Did you have things?
So...
Also, there were all the ones our viewers and listeners put that we can discuss.
But there was
a
lot of
far
them,
too much reading for an American.
But there was a lot of them in there that were basically like, yeah, we need to fix Denny 2, and that's
yeah,
not
those
what
don't count.
Those
yeah.
don't count.
So
at
Dan
all.
Will tell us what he wants to change while you see if there's any worthwhile ones. Sure.
So my main thing right now is I think scenario speed is a problem. So
well, does this really need a change to the rules or a change to the steamroller packet?
I mean, what's the difference?
Fair,
but. So, you know, and this is most pronounced.
Actually, that is a good point. There shouldn't be a fucking difference. Like, there are core game differences, such as being able to play X points down is different in the core rulebook and in Steamroller. Why?
Well, I mean, realistically, yeah. the difference yeah. between the core rulebook and Steamroller is that Steamroller goes through CID every year.
Sure, but petty little it. Shit like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Like the fact that you could play, I mean, now with the Mark 3 points, it's I think it's like 8 or 9 or whatever, but like in Mark 2.
No, it's 5 versus 4.
It's still 5 versus 4?
Yep.
Yeah, 5 points down versus 4 points down. Why? Why isn't that yeah. universal between the rulebook and Steamroller?
Yeah, that actually is the same thing for other games, too. Guild Ball has a very similar issue where their open play document says that all the minor guilds get a bonus, but they don't in casual play, which is weird.
But at least it's a lack of a thing versus the bonus being different between the two. You know what I mean? Like, this is a core... Yeah, I don't know.
It's just a random inconsistency. But anyways,
yeah, I agree.
So, like, this is most pronounced with Pit 2 and Invasion, where going first is just objectively the correct choice to do right now.
Yeah.
And there's empirical data to back that up.
Mm-hmm.
So my main thing would be, number one, fix those two damn scenarios because they're also awful to play on.
Yeah.
But two, I think there's way too much plus one to go first and way too much extra two inches of deployment. And if those things get cleaned out of stuff so that those are still rare bonuses, you know, I think things get better.
Are they just rare bonuses or just those theme forces are just so much better to take that we
well,
see
no,
them
no, I'm
all
saying
the time.
Right now they're way too prevalent.
Okay.
So, going first is too good in those scenarios, so having theme forces that give you the bonuses in those scenarios are
and
especially
since there's factions that can
and,
stack
and
both.
The, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I mean also this is one thing that a lot of people that run events and people that set up the tables do not aggressively make one side better than the other.
It's
and,
hard. Yeah. It's really, really hard as someone who has had to set up 80 tables the last
yeah.
2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not blaming anyone because this yeah. is a difficult thing. But I mean, I make sure when I am setting up a table for someone that I aggressively make one side better than the other.
Plus, it's rough because, you know, then what happens is you make the table so one side's better than the other, and then Nathan and his opponent roll off, and Nathan wins the choice, and Nathan chooses to, or Nathan loses, so his opponent chooses to go first, and then Nathan chooses the side that's better, and then his opponent complains about that until the TO comes and changes it.
This happened?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, shit.
As beginning Mark 2 or end of Mark 1?
It was Mark 2.
Yeah.
I mean, I was my side had three walls and his didn't. Maybe he should have chosen to go second. Actually, apparently no. Apparently the correct thing was to choose to go first and then throw a bitch fit because you decided you deserved a wall.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if I am setting up a table, I will like specifically do things like put a forest directly in front of a flag on one side of the board.
I got the last laugh.
You play the game more than he does. And you're allowed at events.
Also, I may have been like literally the person who... Never mind. Never mind.
Nathan's hit list is much better than ours. Or I should say kill list.
But yeah.
But yeah, if anybody that runs events is listening, I mean, my suggestion is to don't even try to be subtle about it. Just aggressively make one side better than the other.
No. Make it aggressively better, but not absurdly game-winningly better. Yeah, it needs to be obvious that one side is better, and needs to be better enough that that matters, but not better enough that it automatically wins.
Yeah. I mean, currently in the current state of the game with the Dan was saying with theme benefits and with scenario speed, that everything is heavily biased towards going first
in many scenarios, not all.
Yeah. But. So yeah, I mean, this is just something that that a lot of tournament organizers either just from lack of time, because yes, this is what I'm suggesting people to do takes time and takes mental effort, and running an event like that by the end of the day, you have no mental effort remaining.
Well, and actually, the hardest part from a TO perspective is not even setting it up that way. It's keeping that consistent over four or five rounds when people put their goddamn trays and shift everything.
Yeah.
Ooh, can they bring radial scenarios back?
No, Nathan.
Okay.
I love the aesthetic of radial scenarios, but they are a bitch as a TO to put on.
Yes, they were a bitch as a TO. I actually enjoyed radial scenarios, but they were a bitch.
Let me ask a clarifying question. Do you want Hungerford to continue to work at PP?
Maybe.
Because he has flat out said that until he is removed or leaves, they will not be back.
Yeah. Well, DC never said there'd be a Mark III. Oh, never mind.
It's fine. Guild Ball Mark III is coming out. Actually, they're on to Mark IV.
No, they're on Season 4 right now. Yeah. They just went through another errata, too.
Sorry, Dan, I interrupted you. Did you have more to say?
I mean, that's my big one. It's just, like I said, most of the core rules I'm fine with. It's just there are scenarios that are causing way too binary of choices, because there have been multiple games I have played in the last year where the most significant role of the entire game is who's going first.
Yep.
And not just like, ooh, that was advantageous, but like nothing else matters.
There are matchups on factions that I have played and in several cases swapped out of that I lose if I don't get the die roll correct.
Yeah, that was one of the times I was playing Epic Troll Jake, and we kind of rolled the game back and figured out that what he needed to do to not auto-lose that game was to win the roll.
Yeah, I mean, and that's even the thing. It's not even... In some of those matchups, it's not even whoever wins the die roll wins. It's if I lose the die roll, we might as well just go get lunch. If I win, then we have to play for an hour and a half, and I probably will still lose, but I at least have agency.
Yep.
So, all right. So that's my rant.
Thomas O'Neill had mentioned about scenarios. Since you were on the subject of scenarios, I thought I'd bring this up. He seems to think the new ones seem pretty live. The objectives got a look, didn't really improve or change.
Is it the color changey one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fading fast.
That's all of them have that.
Yeah, but these ones are fading really fast.
Oh, okay.
That's how I was saying. Like, it took me forever to even get it light up. I remember them being more finger touch sensitive.
It's because you're old and you have less circulation.
It is
because
I'm
fingers.
Legally dead, yes.
Yeah.
Mostly
He had mentioned about making the zones and rectangles down smaller. Which, I mean, yeah, that could possibly work. But
as a player, I don't care. As a TO, we've invested how many thousands of dollars
in privateers invested in circles and in rectangles. All your TOs around the
world. Do you remember the 12x36 sheets we used to have?
Yeah,
you probably still have those.
Yeah, they're somewhere. It's the Gaspy zone. Because he gets to like hide in a corner of it behind a building.
I was so happy when that scenario went away.
Fucking zone.
Not behind a building, like in a wreck marker on top of a hill behind clouds.
Yeah,
is what he would do.
Yeah,
yeah. Remember that was good times.
Oh yeah, back in the day when you killed your own Jack.
I know we're not really talking about Infernals too much, but when Keith And I, and who was the third Gatsby 2 player on that conversation? There were three Mark II Gatsby, oh, Travis, when three Mark II Gatsby 2 players all tell you something is not okay, listen. You cannot have charging incorporeal models.
Yeah.
As a feat. That is not okay.
Nope.
Well, I'm just going to mention this one here because, you know, Mr. Malorian says, what can be done to nerf Sturgis so he stops dominating the meta?
Buff the other Sturgis.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And just let them fight.
And let them dock.
Depends. Yeah. I guess which we need to figure out which Sturgis is. Yeah. We need to figure out which one is actually dominating the meta.
Well, which one's dominating our meta? Every meta is dominated by one of the two Sturgi, if I recall correctly.
Which one makes caviar?
Which one makes caviar? That's Sturgeons.
I played Sturgis 2 at a Who's the Boss event once.
Did you regret everything?
I won the game with his feet because I pulled out the
Okay, so it's Sturgis 2 then.
They're not bad casters. They're just boring.
Sturgis 2 is awful.
Is he?
Yes.
Yeah, Sturgis 2 was the one I got. It's like I barely won on
push away. He's the push away.
He has the exact same feet. He just has a pointless spell list and cricks.
Oh. I mean, so in Who's the Boss, I guess he was okay then.
Yeah,
the problem is he has an entire copycat of other spells from Crix.
Well, I mean,
with
Sturgis,
the lowest focus stat in the faction.
Sturgis 1 is even worse because he is an inferior knockoff of Striker 1, except there's already Maddox, who is an inferior knockoff of Striker 1, but is still even
better.
He
is the only caster with both Snipe and Arcane Shield, though, in one package.
No. We do have an added Zappity Grumble we should answer right away for Arctic Circle, which is what is facetiousness? Because he apparently is unfamiliar with it.
I'm not going to answer it.
For our listeners, Sturgis is not actually dominating the meta. He's a very bad caster, and he's bad. And no one plays
because
he's bad.
I'd like to see people out there making Sturgis lists.
He's not bad, he's just aggressively mediocre.
Correct.
Yeah,
and aggressively mediocre doesn't work when there's good things out there.
I mean, and that was always the problem with a lot of Crix casters back in the day is you were surrounding with so many better casters. I mean, same thing with Signar. Signar has got so many better casters than regular Sturgis.
But
I mean,
you can have Haley 2, you can Haley have 3. Wacky, ironic fun with trash, and you can win with overpowered stuff. It's the stuff in the middle that's neither excitingly goofy or overpowered that suffers.
Yeah.
No, to give back that, Sturgis has Arcane Shield and Snipe. Striker 1 has Arcane Shield and Snipe, and then Maddox has Dauntless Resolve, which is +3 armor to a unit, and tough, and Snipe. So, I mean, Dauntless Resolve is if you're playing infantry, it's replaceable with Arcane Shield. So, yeah, I mean, there are three casters that are basically inferior. There are three.
The sad thing is, Sturgis is probably actually the most enjoyable of those three to play.
That may be true, but he's easily the worst of the three.
Sure. Well, do you want to have fun or do you want to win?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, somebody was asking about Games Workshop games.
I mean, that is a question you need to ask yourself in that system.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about Games Workshop, then the answer is no.
Whoa!
Are we into Zappity Grumble phase? Or does anybody possibly else have anything else more to add to?
Nah. We've talked on the same topic for like 30 minutes now.
Shit.
That's
what's wrong?
Oh, yeah. Infernals happened. Who's Infernals sick? Will continue to happen.
Yeah.
Infernals we have now covered the Infernal CID.
Infernals were ridiculous when they came out. They've
Andy,
been toned down
a little
bit.
Summon in some more conversation. Just clip it in here.
No. So I think. Oh, sorry. Yep. I just.
They're pretty close to
me. I want to say something real quick.
What? Thank Legacy.
Was that the thing you wanted to say? Are you done now?
No.
Okay.
Zibit. I want to have an episode where, as the CID ends for the Infernals, mm-hmm. I think we should review it then.
Sure. Yeah, that seems a better spot.
Rather than trying to
put out content that is immediately out of date.
Yeah. Correct.
Yep.
I did like somebody on the Facebook said that with the not activating, summoning is basically useless now. Because with activating, they need to be able to have a combat action to be worth a four. It's a four-cost spell. Mm-hmm. And a four-cost spell really should have
delete heavy
five attacks, boosted to hit, blah, 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 and then have a heavy left over in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair for a four-cost spell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead, you can summon him in the back line, and then you can have that four-cost spell do the same thing next turn.
Yeah. Yeah. But
I just
my one, I'll get one little, I won't say dig, I will say an example of where I and Games Workshop games differ. Somebody was talking about the wounding rules in Kill Team, which is that You go and attack a guy.
Mm-hmm.
You roll a D6 to hit him. Mm-hmm. And you got a target number. Then you roll a D6 to wound him.
Mm-hmm.
Then they roll a D6 to save.
Mm-hmm.
Then there, if a certain other faction, they roll an additional D6 to save. Then if you still killed them, you roll a D6 to see if you killed them or if it was just a flesh wound. So mm-hmm. you have to roll 5 times just to try to kill a thing, all of which are 1D6 die rolls. And if it turns out that after these first 4 meaningful rolls, you just rolled, meh, it was a flesh wound, you are not allowed to target that model with any additional attacks. So even if your guy has like 5 attacks, if your first one makes flesh wound, your other 4 are just say, jerk off.
Company of Iron, I think, does that too now. Isn't it when you hit somebody with and they're knocked down? It's not as many dice rolls to get to that knockdown point. It's different. But.
Because there also is actual penalties to a flesh wound in Company of Iron. Because either you're...
Kill Team, it's just, meh, nothing happened.
Well, that was my problem with... I mean, that's Games Workshop in a nutshell.
That was my issue. Nathan's problem with Games Workshop in a nutshell.
I mean, well, of course, they're doing better because it wasn't, you know, you get all to those 5, then because of that, you drop the ball and your turn immediately over.
Yeah. Also, in most Games Workshop games, that exact sequence would still happen, but instead of A die, it was 100 dice, and then 5 of their 100 guys would die.
To be fair, it's usually 100 dice, then 80 dice, then
you're
60
right.
dice.
It's like,
and then
right.
5 dice.
180, 60, 20, 5, and then those guys
die.
It
was fine. When I played Shooty Orcs, I just had 3 small-sized Chessic dice bricks that I needed for unit shooting.
I have seen 120 dice roll
on
one
attack.
Oh, it
is the glorious thing.
The last time I watched a game of War Machine was, like, I went
to Warhammer.
I went to games, or I went to Last Square before they shut down because it was for an event.
Sure.
And there was 2 guys playing, and I remember one was Necrons. I don't remember the other one.
Yeah, it might have actually been Hans and I playing.
Maybe. I don't know. But
Hans and I played a lot.
Like, for an hour, it was literally just one of them picked up a buckets of dice, rolled it, rolled half of them, rolled half of those, then the other guy rolled 20 dice, and then took one guy off the table.
Yep.
Then
that
reverse
like...
rolls. No models moved because everything was ranged table.
Yeah. Actually, that does sound like a Necron versus Space Marine game.
Yeah. And I'm just watching them like... Fucking A.
Well, no, there's also...
And I'm the asshole.
Well, and you forget
some
there was
people
also
like throwing dice.
The amazingly tactical thing of realizing that you're playing against Necrons, so all your mounted infantry immediately gets out and hides behind them because your vehicles are all dead. Yeah. Because any 6s you roll to hit automatically do a glancing hit.
Yeah.
That was the one thing I love the idea of Gorkamorka. So the idea of orcs driving around in vehicles and that and just destroying, basically Mad Max with orcs. Sounds awesome to me.
So Mad Max.
Until I played it. Which involved almost the same type of thing. As I shoot a vehicle, oh, I hit the vehicle, and then I have to roll on the where do I hit the vehicle? I hit the vehicle in this part here. Okay, and I roll to see if I wound the vehicle. I wound the vehicle, and I check another chart. I didn't do anything.
If you're
going to
go through that much hell, just play Car Wars.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, 90 Quillianic says counterpoint, GW's models aren't made out of melted crayons. Sure. Let's say GW's models are the most beautiful fucking things on the planet. Buy them, paint them, enjoy them. Don't suffer through a garbage game on their behalf.
And then
I would rather play War Machine with labeled Pogs that are base size sized.
I mean, that's just because you want to say Pog.
No.
Pog. I just...
Is it PAWG? Is it made by dogs?
Make a game that's fun to play so I can play beautiful models and enjoy it. Or...
Yeah, no, I mean, and the Games Workshop has done some absolutely dumb stuff, like when they came out with at the end event for Warhammer 8th Edition, they came out with these these centerpiece models that were just absolutely stunningly beautiful,
and $200 a piece.
$200 a piece, and then they like completely upset the world, and so half of them didn't have rules anymore.
Right. I mean, anything having to do with the launch of Age of Sigmar, like that, those 4 pages of rules are the worst miniatures game that has ever existed.
It's
better now.
Well, yes, it's fine. Those rules only existed to drive all of us out because we would not have spent money on new factions.
Yeah, no, and
like that was the entire point of those rules was to social engineer all existing factions out of the game without actively invalidating rules. We're just going to make it so socially awkward for you to play your existing ones that you buy Stormcast Eternals just so you shut up.
No. And the new games, the way that the new game is now is much better in the state that it was when it first started. Once they added actual points in the game, you know, where you can actually build an army instead of saying, Just bring what you want, and then we'll just fight.
Mean, in fairness,
we were saying
if the
since 2012 that sacrificing Jack Kirby's soul, you know, or Tom Kirby's soul would save that thing, and it turns out it was true.
If the current rules were punch yourself in the dick until you vomit blood, it would be better than the launch rules of Age of Sigmar.
Yes.
It's not hard to say it got better.
No, let's not get carried away. No one is defending the launch rules, other than their marketing department.
And then,
are you a woman? You are literally worse at the game by the rules now.
No, you could put on a fake beard and get your rerolls.
Fuck. Jesus, fuck.
Hey, all right. It was not solely
women.
Sexist.
Hey, children and women,
and
the groups that we are trying to attract to the game so it doesn't die, fuck off.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, they're foolish. They don't think like
so
that.
Then, and
Zappity Grubbles. We're going to Zappity Grubbles.
One more stupid GW trick.
Oh, we don't need to.
Because back when I played Games Workshop, I played Eldar, and they came out with an update to Eldar that made their transport, the Wave Serpent, one of the best models
that's
in the
what
game.
They do.
And the same week they discontinued it.
Yeah. That was...
They discontinued it and made it one of the best models in the game in the same week.
Yeah, and it was out of print for like 6 months. It was the best.
Why would you? Because you make it better to sell the... The reason why is the guy writing the book had no idea they're going to discontinue the model because there's no integrity within it.
Well, yeah, and they're...
And I don't mean integrity like embezzlement. I mean integrity like, you know,
the
cohesiveness.
The department didn't talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was out of print for 6 months. It was the worst fucking thing ever.
It's just game balance where you have the person write the book for their favorite faction, so they just make sure it's the best.
Because, I mean, I was playing Eldar at the time. I was like, let me get some Wave Serpents. The guy at the game shop was like, no, they don't make them anymore. Like,
no, it was worse than that. They were Forge World only for a while. Before Forge World started coming to Adepticon. Because that was right when the first year Forge World came to Adepticon. And there was a 500-person line for the Adepticon Forge World booth.
Jesus.
Which was great because I was in with the people at the last square. So I just walked to the front of the line by helping them set the booth up.
Zavity.
And then there were people pissed.
Zavity.
Great.
Zavity.
Gumball!
All right.
Somebody had asked, which is better, Popeye's biscuits or
Red Lobster
biscuits?
Popeye biscuits.
Popeye biscuits.
This is an or question. I will answer with no because I'm on a keto diet.
Sure, but which one is more likely to tempt you off of it?
Probably Red Lobster because I don't actually like Popeye's biscuits.
Fuck off.
I mean, granted.
How
granted,
dare you?
The problem with...
They're just not very good biscuits.
No, here's the problem. Here's the problem is we can always go to Popeyes. Going to Red Lobster is like it's hell.
Yeah,
no,
but their cheddar biscuits are like
their good. Cheddar biscuits are good, but you can't go there just to eat cheddar biscuits.
Layered biscuits are better than that dollop of sandy dough in a lumpy shape. That they're fine. I mean, they're garlicky.
Obviously, Popeyes needs cheese biscuits.
Peeling those layers, man.
Could you? Do they have cheese that you could just ask them to sprinkle some on there?
No, because
they have red beans and rice.
It would need to be mixed into the biscuit.
Oh, yeah, that's true. No, but seriously, Popeye's biscuits are the best.
What is the best fast food biscuit?
I mean, that's certainly Popeye's then.
Oh, yes.
I actually prefer McDonald's biscuits to Popeye's.
What?
Please don't splatter me with blood.
I mean... It's concrete here. We can clean it up.
Yeah. No. I didn't say don't splatter the blood. I said please
don't get
Bumblebee. My sweater dirty.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
David. No, he'll look like cool combat pose with the blood all over him because he won.
I just don't like Popeye's biscuits.
I need your password for Conflict Chamber repo. You may die, but that needs to live on.
Yeah, Conflict Chamber gets updated every week. I don't know. We just haven't seen him.
Yeah, he must be alive. He's cashing
totally...
Grandma's Social Security checks.
He's totally
Grandma
not...
must be alive. She's cashed her Social Security check every week.
He's totally not locked in Andy's basement.
Yeah. Being force-fed Popeye's biscuits.
There goes your keto diet. I mean, even McDonald's biscuits are... I mean...
If they're fresh... I
would much rather have an Egg McMuffin.
Yeah. I mean the Egg McMuffin. The Egg McMuffin is a work of art.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, the McDonald's biscuits go the same way as the Red Lobster biscuits, where they have that. It's more of a doughiness inside of them versus like those flaky, the flakiness that you get in a Popeye's biscuit. I don't like that solid dough aspect to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even like with McDonald's, I'd rather go with their English muffins versus
Egg McMuffin.
Well, I take the English muffins too. Personally.
The big thing is the English muffins a lot more consistent. Like McDonald's biscuits, when they're fresh, are really good, but they drop off really quick.
Hardee's has really good biscuits if you come there on a full moon and the planets are in line.
Well, once again,
the
if they are
terrible.
Fresh, they're good. But if it's like 9:30,
they
you're
have to be
the biscuits from 8.
Yeah, it's I've had a McDonald's biscuit. I got a sandwich, and I'm like,
this biscuit
an hour
cold.
Later, I'm like, oh, this is the worst.
Yeah,
this is the worst choice I've ever made.
Yeah.
Whereas, like the other week when you bought the Popeyes biscuits, those had cooled off and were still good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They also probably are 50% butter, but I'm okay.
Well, that's why they're good. Yes.
So, I was thinking, what could you just cook up like a ramen and just instead of making broth, just put it all butter?
I mean, yes, that's butter noodles. It's a thing. It's a dollar less than any other entree at Noodles and Company.
Well, I was going to say, Andy, are you familiar with, what's the name of that ramen style? The one where you cook the meat until it literally dissolves into the broth, and it's basically just like pure fat?
Yeah.
It is the best kind of ramen.
Yeah.
It is also going to give you a heart attack, but...
That's fine. It's coming sooner or later.
Yeah. Sweet. Comme sous Todd.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I want to go. I want to be eating something like that.
Zappity.
Crumble. I didn't see any others.
My first recommendation is Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battles for your Nintendo Switch. It's XCOM, but adorable, and all the Rabbids are the best, and fuck Minions, Rabbids for life.
Did you get the gold edition?
So...
He had to buy an 11th copy of Diablo.
I'll tell you.
I am so mad about this. So what happened is I got on to the market, and it's like, here's this like $50 game. It's on sale for $20. I'm like, fuck yeah, and I bought it. And I told Andy, I'm like, you should get this. And he's like, hey, the gold edition with $40 worth of DLC is $25. I'm like, motherfucker. But so I go back on their market. The DLC is not on sale for $5, which means you're just fucked if you buy the regular edition.
Sure.
The DLC is still full price.
You know the fucking annoying part about that whole thing with Rabbids Gold Edition? So it was at the very top. The regular edition is at the very top. You had to scroll down through all the other games that are on sale. It was on the very, very bottom, the very last one, gold edition.
I'm mad they let me buy the regular edition. Like that was very frustrating. And the fact that I can't just buy the expansion for the $5 or $6 difference. Like
I think you could buy them. They're like $6 a piece something like that.
No, there's like a $5 one, and there's like a $1 little like graphic thing.
Sure.
And then there was like a $30 full like expansion thing.
Are you
and the gold had all of that in it.
Oh.
That's
really annoying. Like I said, the gold edition should have been right there next to the other one.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But whatever. The game is a lot of fun. It's like XCOM, but adorable and great. And Mario can hit a fucker with a hammer and just annihilate him. And Rabbid Mario hits him with a hammer and annihilates him even more. And Luigi's death glare of meme fame is a goddamn game mechanic. That's amazing.
Is that so? Eventually, you could swap out your Rabbid Luigi for another.
Yeah. So there's
Luigi.
there's 8 characters, I believe. I don't have. So there's you start with Mario, Rabbid Luigi, Rabbid Peach, and then Luigi and Peach and Rabbid Mario join in as well. And I think the last two, judging by the shape of their silhouettes, one of them's Yoshi, and so I assume the other one is Rabbid Yoshi. And you always make a party of 3 characters from this team.
DK is involved in there too.
DK is the first world's boss, is Rabbid Donkey Kong, and he is gigantic and angry.
Okay.
And adorable. So you can switch out your teams and whatever. And Luigi is a goddamn sniper who also has explosive drones that he throws out there as weaponry.
Sure.
But the Luigi death glare of meme fame is one of his special powers. That's basically just Overwatch. So if people move on their turn, he gives them the death glare and shoots them in their fucking face.
Awesome.
It is awesome. And it's hilarious and adorable. And Rabbid Peach taking selfies of things never gets old.
Yeah, I've went into like one of the... Talking to the Sunflower. I'm very, very early in the game, but they were talking to the Sunflower. Just Rabbid Peach is just sitting there with her phone all the time taking
selfies. So I already told you that Rabbid Donkey Kong is the boss last game.
Fine.
When you beat him, like he like falls off a king, like just kind of like King Kong style. And so she's taking selfies while he's falling. And so it's just like these freeze frame selfies. And like the fifth one, he's just back up next to her, like smiling and throwing up the peace sign. And then the next one, he's all the way back down again. It is a blast. It is fun. And gameplay is really, really good. And it's actually good. for, I had to Google it because I thought there has to be a penalty or something. So every fight I'd go into, and there's recurrent damage. So like if you get half killed in one fight, the next fight you're still half hurt, right? And you heal every once in a while, and you can find mushrooms that'll heal you. And also like after like every third fight, like you'll heal because those are like the sub chapters. But at the start of every fight, it's just like, hey, if you press Y, I'll fully heal you and give all your guys 50% extra health. And so I Googled. I'm like, what's the drawback? Like, what am I giving up for doing it? It's nothing. The game's like, hey, if you're a kid and the game's hard, just, you know, it's easier. And it's like, that's cool, you know, that they just throw that in there for accessibility reasons.
Well, that's like the Pokemon Let's Go stuff. You have the ability to bring in a second trainer type stuff, which, you know, if you're trying to, like, power game through, it makes it super easy. But if you're playing with your kid, it's like, here. Here's a way I can hop in at a per-fight level and give you a hand if you need it.
Yeah, because there's no difficulty level at the start of the game. It's just if you want it to be easier, if you need it to be easier, just press this button, and now this fight's easier.
You're fine with that, but you're not fine with Bayana Commando Rearm 2 by giving you an actual jump button.
Yeah, because that's a core gameplay change that betrays the entire spirit of the game.
You could just unprogram that jump button.
Yeah, they should have done that before they released the game.
No.
Because that doesn't make the game easier.
It kind of does.
Well, but my point is, it isn't just like you do double damage and everybody take, you know what I mean?
Sure,
like,
sure.
It is a quintessential, like, but I mean, so there are games where you can say, like, just give me the BFG so I win every fight. And I don't know.
I'm in it for the story.
But I will say, though, there are parts in Bayana Commando Rearm 2, though, that has where you have to do a jump and a swing grab too.
I think
which
it is
difficult.
Technically fully beatable without ever jumping because there's an achievement for doing so.
Yep.
So you could just not use the jump. It's just, to me, the lack of a jump button is the entire defining trait of Bionic Commando. So it doesn't sit well that they put it in
there.
Sure. I understand that it's a bit hypocritical, but I think it's a different enough stance because of that that I'm not going to
It is not.
I hate myself for a lot of things. That stance is not going to be one of the things I hate about myself.
Yes, changing stats, not programming new functionality.
Correct. Do you want my second recommendation, or are you going to come back to me? Do you guys want more time?
Why
Dan will like this one. Dan likes weird, confusing shit.
All right, I'm already in.
Suspiria.
Okay.
So it's in a classic, and Andy will be aware of this film, if nothing else, because the last two Red Letter Media videos were reviews of the first Suspiria and the remake Suspiria. The first Suspiria is a pretty classic, weird Italian horror film that's very surreal, very beautiful. Very,
I think I've actually heard of that.
I think I've actually seen it.
Sure. And it is weird, and just it's a fucking weird-ass Italian horror movie. And then they did a remake last year that was gorgeous and unsettling and bizarre and has Tilda Swinton. And
is
it also
a man
has
or a woman in this one?
Yes. Tilda Swinton plays three roles in this film, one of which is an elderly German man who... The people who make every other old person makeup need to take a lesson from this because Tilda Swinton looks like an elderly German man in this movie. But it is fucking bizarre and fucking beautiful. The fact that it was nominated for zero Oscars, very specifically the fact that goddamn Queen biopic got best editing over this movie is a travesty. But if you like just surreal, bizarre horror art, mind fuckery. This is what David Lynch thinks he's doing when he's shitting out garbage. This is art.
But is it 30 minutes of quinoa?
It is what?
It's 30 minutes of quinoa.
No. It is a little long. The new one's 2.5 hours. It takes its time, but it deserves to take its time.
I think the reason why is it didn't get nominated is because of the horror element on there. Because it's
a trash genre.
At least the Academy is starting to recognize more films for being art in that now, somewhat.
I mean, I guess the Academy is just not a fan of people pissing themselves where their bodies are ripped and twisted horrifically over a sequence that you wish was half as long because you grow increasingly uncomfortable while it's happening.
I mean, they generally stay away from blockbusters besides like something like Titanic or that, but they usually stick away from that. It was like even... It was almost unheard of that Black Panther got nominated for Best Picture.
Well,
I mean, that's...
I love Black Panther. We all know there's a reason Black Panther is the Marvel film that got nominated. It's an important film for sociological reasons, and that's what the Academy Award was celebrating.
Sure.
It's a good movie, but if Black Panther had been Infinity War, it doesn't get those nominations.
Even though I feel Infinity War is a much better film overall than Black Panther.
But yeah, it's culturally important, and they had to. And the only way they have to do this is by like throwing Oscars at it.
I'm using the gym method here for deciding which movie I like more. How many times have I seen Black Panther since it came out? As how many times I've seen Infinity War?
I thought you were using the method of what does everyone else like, therefore I hate.
No, he does have a specific movie formula that he claims to follow, but I think he actually follows the formula you're saying.
Yes.
I've watched Black Panther twice since I bought it on DVD, so I think in an Infinity War I've done three times each.
I know I've seen Infinity War at least three or four times. Yeah. Black Panther, I actually haven't even watched my DVD Blu-ray copy. But
Suspiria, you like Suspiria. It is very confusing and artistic.
I looked it up. I've seen it. It was a weird and interesting movie.
The sequel is very interesting because the twist that you find out like 10 minutes from the twist that you figured out way earlier, but that the main character finds out 10 minutes from the end of the film, is like in the first 5 minutes of the remake. They're just like, this is here. This is what's happening. I'm not going to hide it. So it's like having a remake of Sixth Sense where everybody knows Bruce Willis is a ghost right away.
Wait, what?
Except for the kid.
Yeah.
Or even in this case, even the kid would know right away.
No, I guess the kid would not. Although, maybe, because it's kind of... No, I think the kid would also kind of... Like, okay. Yes.
I was just trying to figure out if it's like we are showing you as the audience the twist, but not the characters.
No, I think the characters in the Suspiria remake also know to some extent. Like, there's a point where instead of it being something weird is going on, I should look into this, and then their suspicions grow. I'm 90% sure I know, but I don't want to admit it, and then eventually deciding that it's time to admit it versus deciding that you have now found out. Point is, it's good. You might hate it, though. It's one of those movies.
My movie I'm going to recommend is Captain Marvel.
Yeah. You took one of mine.
One of yours.
Oh, yeah. By the way, the kid always knew. It was Bruce Willis who didn't know. Sure. But I don't think the kid was confused. I think the kid knew Bruce Willis was a ghost from moment one. But yeah, sorry.
No, it's
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel is a pretty solid film. I mean, it's visually it's up there with all the rest. It's pretty much hits all the beats that every other Marvel film has hit.
And as an added bonus, it pisses all the neckbeards off.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, and also the opening Marvel Studio logo.
Yes, it was a very, very nice little tribute to Stan Lee. I heard people talking about, because I saw it a week later than, actually almost 2 weeks later. I saw it on Saturday, so...
Like yesterday, Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is... I think that's just 1 week later.
My wife is a huge Captain Marvel fan, so we had tickets opening day.
So you're going to see Captain Marvel when it comes out next month, opening day?
It's going to be so fucking amazing when they introduce the X-Men to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then Carol Danvers dies.
Well, if they go that route...
not going to go that route, but... Yeah. for those that don't know, in the comics...
Jim? I mean, it stars a woman, Jim. I mean, it's not hard to figure out why it pisses off the neckbeards.
Yeah.
They don't like when their Star Warses or their Marvels movies have one of them dang not white a man.
Yeah. Of course, the Red Letter Media folks did say that basically how she got her powers was just kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Okay, how do half of...
I know.
How did the Fantastic Four get their powers?
How did the Hulk get his powers?
Yeah,
how did Spider-Man get his powers?
Like, the only people who are happy with how they get their powers are the people who are rich, and most of them had death in occur to get them rich.
Even Tony Stark doesn't like how he got the core, although they got rid of that eventually, but originally he had that core in him, and that wasn't something he wanted. That was the shrapnel in his
heart. I mean, we've covered this before. Tony Stark's power is not that he has a core. It's that he's rich. He has all the money.
Sure.
But even then, it took his parents getting gunned down from directly have access to that.
The one thing that I haven't seen anybody else mention that I thought was really fucking amazing with the film is the de-aging. So we've always talked about the de-aging in all the other Marvel films, like we've seen Robert Downey Jr. is young in Iron Man 3. You got to see, you know...
It was flawless in this one.
And then seeing Samuel L. Jackson as really young, even before that we even saw him in like Pulp Fiction and that.
I did see someone point out something that the de-aging process was flawless, except one moment, which isn't even a problem with the effects, which is he kneels down to pet Goose.
Yes.
And when he stands up, he does the old man, like, hand on the knee, kind of, like, stand up in phases, even though he looks super young. And it's like, they needed a stuntman to stand up after petting a cat, because this 70-year-old man's having issues.
Yeah, I didn't notice that at all.
But neither did I until this reviewer was talking about it, and he showed that clip where he's like, oh, God, standing back up. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a grandpa stand right there.
When I was in my early 20s, though, if I was kneeling, that sucked.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Not but, that kind of suck.
But the de-aging process in this was is amazing. And unlike in other films where they, you know, I mean, this was done on an actor, so it was probably a little bit easier for them to do. But like Peter Cushing's appearance that was in Rogue One, that was a little bit more Uncanny Valley. Not as... For
Peter
me,
Cushing's was not bad. It was Leia was the one that really threw it off.
Really?
Oh, man, no.
Oh, I thought
Leia
was much better.
You see for like 1 second and she's mostly motionless and it was
the
okay.
The difference is I Peter had Cushing. 20 years to accept that Peter Cushing was dead.
I guess
not
so.
15 minutes.
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, there was too many age.
Like, even if they had gotten, even if she wasn't dead and they'd gotten her, they would have had to de-age her.
Sure.
And it
but like
have,
I said, I think that's why.
Sure.
It was because it was like, man, she just died. Not.
There was a lot of close-ups on Peter Cushing as well. And Sam, it didn't look, there wasn't that many, but he it really
also
held
Cushing.
Up.
They just didn't need Cushing in there.
They could have just had the back of his head the entire film. And
or just not
fine.
Have Tarkin in there at all. There's
I think
no
need
for Tarkin.
Him.
No, you don't. You have Krennic be in charge of the Death Star. Krennic fucking dies. Tarkin, so Tarkin's his replacement.
Well, Tarkin
could have
had a smaller role.
Smaller role. He didn't have to be the main.
He could have had
main bad guy. Yeah.
You could have had, even if you think you'd rather have a little bit, you could have explained that Krennic is in charge of the Death Star, and then you have Krennic die, and then. They're yeah. like, we need a new person in charge of the Death Star. Let's send Tarkin there.
Like, they could have easily had Tarkin have less screen time than Vader, all the way to zero, and it would have still worked.
They both could have had zero, and it still would have worked. But I'm not greedy. I'll take zero Tarkin before I take zero Vader. But
oh, come on, Vader! That was probably my favorite use of Vader in one of the Star
well,
Wars
it's
films.
It's everybody's favorite use of yeah. Vader. It's to get to see Vader do what Vader does. Was basically given a reason for him to be the most feared. Member of the Empire,
and I mean, he was only on it for like 2 minutes, which was the other great part about it.
Correct, he got his one pithy liner in, yeah. and he killed a bunch of bitches, and then he got the stare there and glare. He did everything Vader does in like 2 minutes.
He gave the Luigi stare to people.
I think Luigi glare Vader would back off,
but the
Leanna Mormont glare.
The aging was just so good in this film. And the acting was fairly decent. I thought, I cannot think of her name. It was...
Captain Marvel.
No, it wasn't Captain Marvel. It was her friend.
Lover.
Her friend. That was the other pilot. I thought her acting in that film was actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in her emotional scene, to basically talking about how Carol had left and that. I thought that was just really well acted. Overall, the movie was solid. I cannot wait for Endgame. It's going to be fucking amazing. And I don't know what they're going to do after that, but I'm excited.
Hopefully they start their next 20-film arc that ends with Doom.
With Dr. Doom?
Yeah. Let's take the time to introduce him. First introduce him as a protagonist, as the ruler of a country, you know, and he's a good guy and everything.
Doom wasn't always... I mean, he was...
As far as despots go, he's reasonably good at running his country.
He runs his country well, but I don't know if he's...
effective evil.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the most... Basically, it's kind of like forced love in there.
Okay,
kind
I
of
mean,
like how
you can't
Castro is loved in... Somewhat in
I don't know.
Cuba?
Like, if he runs his country well and his people have a decent standard of living, I don't think it has to be a North Korea situation. You know, like, let's look at Wakanda. Wakanda's a monarchy. These people have no say in their government. It is a dictatorship via monarchy, but they have a high standard of living, so they love their ruler. Doom Latvia could be like that, or Latveria, rather, could be like that, except he also will blow up the moon if he needs to.
Sure.
Right?
I think that actually the movie that you could introduce him and do it well, it would not work. Is the Doctor Strange 2. If they introduce him as... Because he is second to the Sorcerer Supreme himself.
Yeah.
I mean, as... But everybody knows him as being the ironclad buffoon of...
Well, and they need to introduce him
Fantastic
with
Four.
The classic use a door like a peasant scene from the comics, which is the only Doom scene that I still remember in vivid detail, which is he just blows through a wall and just like gaze upon the visage of Doom and just beats the shit out of like all the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And then like he stops and they're like, why'd you attack us? He's like, I didn't attack you. I just defended myself very well against some pathetic worms. And they're like, what are you talking about? You blew through a wall. And he's like, well, how else would I enter a room? And Spider-Man's like using the door and he goes, like a peasant?
Doom is probably one of my favorite villains.
Like a peasant, blow up a wall.
I still say that it's really sad when the Roger Corman version of Doctor Doom is the best movie version of Doctor Doom we've ever seen,
because it's the only accurate Doctor Doom we've
pretty
seen.
Pretty much,
all the other ones are whatever the fucks.
Just weird knockoff versions. But Captain Marvel, good.
Yeah.
All right. Coke has a new product, orange vanilla Coke.
Yes, and it's actually good. The Coke Zero version.
Do you like Dreamsicles?
It doesn't taste like a Dreamsicle at all to me.
It's just like
it tastes like
smoother.
A rotten Dreamsicle. It's just the Coke part. I could do with the cream and orange, but the Coke part of it is what throws me off.
Yeah, I could see that.
It's drinkable. I guess that would be my ringing endorsement. It would just be a picture of me with my thumbs up saying it's drinkable.
If you're going to have to drink an orange soda, would you rather drink that or LiveWire?
I would drink LiveWire.
Well, you're wrong.
I'm saying no preparation, no buildup, just like the middle of Endgame, that scene happens, Dan, right? Like, come on.
I mean, that would get me to watch 30 hours of movies to get caught up.
Right? Like, you're just halfway through
it. It's 40-something now.
Yeah,
well, I've seen, like, the first 10 hours of it.
Oh, okay.
I need to see it again because it's been years.
Oh, yeah, and there's these weird, like, the skinny can Diet Cokes that are, like, bizarrely flavored and yeah.
Some of them are good and some of them are terrible.
Yeah.
The ginger lime is pretty good and is the blood orange is pretty good, too.
I will say, Dan, that that the new vanilla orange Coke is not it's not RC10 level. It's better than RC10.
Correct. I voluntarily drank it. Like, it was not a condition for continuing to be on this podcast.
Yeah, it's drinkable.
All right, and I will recommend another Switch game, and that is Octopath Traveler, which I fairly recently picked up, and it sticks something and tickles the OCD part of my brain in interesting ways.
Octopath Traveler's interesting. Yeah, I know that a big complaint a lot of people have is that the characters don't actually interact with each other's plot lines, which makes the whole 8 plot lines thing ring kind of hollow. But, I mean, when you boil down to it, how much did the characters really interact with each other's plot lines in, like, the World of Ruin in Final Fantasy VI, right? Yeah. Like, it's honestly always been like that. They just hit it better. I think Octopath, like, letting you go in whatever order you want, like, makes it more obvious, but it's really always been like that. Yeah, old-school RPGs, they're harder and harder to come across.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, Switch game-wise, have either of you, because you don't have a Switch, right, Dan?
I have a Switch.
You do have a Switch. Have any of you looked at Baba Is You?
What? No.
No, I saw it when I was looking through all the things, and the amount of kind of bad indie games that go through the Switch now is kind of, it's a little overwhelming, the amount of games that they release.
It
on
obviously
now
has a lower developer cost than the other two consoles.
Baba Is You is an interesting little puzzle game, and it has that Scribblenauts thing where you can beat a level easily, or you can do it in a more interesting, fun, difficult way if you want to. So, like, you're free to do stuff.
That dinosaur can't fly a helicopter at all.
No, the gorilla could, but the monkey couldn't. So we decided that it's thumbs that are required to fly a helicopter. Yeah,
that's so adorable.
Oh my god, watching Lewis's kid get angry at all these things I was doing with Scribblenauts because I was just being batshit crazy. And she's like, "No!" And she just like yanked my Kindle from my hands because I was doing it wrong. It's wonderful. I'm like, of course you have a gorilla flying a helicopter in the library.
Exactly.
Why wouldn't you? But no, so Baba Is You.
I mean, did he use the lead pipe?
Is the main thing is you'll have like it's a top-down thing where you just move around this little bunny-like creature whose name is Baba, and each level will have rules. Like, so there'll be a level that Baba Is You, and then there'll be like this walled-off room with a door and then a flag, and it'll say the rules are on the screen, and the rules will say Baba Is You. Wall is stop. Door is locked. Flag is win. So the door is locked. Wall stops you. You control Baba. You need to get to the flag to win. Baba can move around, and it can push things. Like if it said rocks are push, you can push rocks. It can push those rules. So you can take Baba as you, and you can take like flag as win, and you can make flag as you by just moving the who as you, and now you control the flag. And then you make door as win, and now when the flag touches the door, you win. Or you can make door is you and move the door to the flag, or just take stop off of wall, and now walls don't stop you anymore because it just says wall is, and that's a factual statement. And then you just walk straight through the wall to the flag and beat the level. And so you can just do all this shit where you're like, yeah, now I control the wall that was in my way, and the wall will just get to the water that used to kill me, but now the water is how I beat the level. Ta-da! And it's great because it'll be like literally it'll start like... do what you want. Like, there'll just be, you can get the key and just open the door, but fuck you. I'd rather be the door and then get to the wall and that wins. Fuck you, flag. And so you can just beat games in different ways. And it's only
have
like
you downloaded it yet? Or is it?
Yeah, it's cute, fun.
I'll have to
price point.
Check it out.
Huh? $15.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's a cheap little indie game. I mean, it's not like a $5 indie game. It's mid level, but it's got like 100 some levels. I haven't gotten that far into it yet.
I am actually more suspicious of a $5 indie game than a $15 indie game.
Yeah, like, because you know that there's some quality control here. The one thing that I've heard is like later levels will have hard rules, like rules you literally can't get to. And so they are locked in stone. But on the other hand, okay.
Sure.
I mean,
there should be a scaling difficulty in most games.
Right. So, but the issue is for some people, I think scaling difficulty is also reducing creativity. Because those, if door is always lock or walls are always stop, you no longer can control the room that's containing the exit. And that's it's no longer a solution.
I would argue sandbox is less creative than some limits.
Correct. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so the people who complain about that are way – like the game's at like 4.9 out of 5, and it's just those point ones are the people who get annoyed by that. There's got to be the gyms out there, Dan.
Yeah, but
– not the gym from our chat.
Correct.
Our gyms.
That is why I stopped my statement to think of a less inclusive way of saying fuck gym.
Okay.
So that's my third recommendation. So now it's your turn. I'll do one after each person.
Yeah. I'm already done. I'm done with my recommendations.
I recommended Octopath Traveler, and I was going to recommend Captain Marvel.
Oh, well, I think we all agree Captain Marvel was good.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets three yeses and a meh,
yeses and an abstain.
That's true. Yeah, true. It wasn't a meh. It was a three and an abstain, which is the standard crippled system approves of a movie recommendation.
I pretty much agree with the Red Letter Media's review, though too. If you were able to, if you would watch Captain Marvel outside of a vacuum from the Marvel movie, so I think it would be less of a film.
I mean, do we want to test this theory? I have not seen a Marvel movie since Iron Man 2.
Yeah, I mean, you should. I didn't mind it. Like, well, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but because a lot of people are saying it's very middle, like workmanship. I thought it was is good. I enjoyed the fact that the Veers character from the start, she was a capable fighter, you know, she didn't need to have that. Oh, I'm weak and I need to learn to fight. Like, she would punch you in the face, and she had the confidence without being egotistical, which is a fine line to balance. Because normally you get a cocky asshole like Tony Stark, or a Star Lord or something, but she had confidence without being quite that.
Captain America before,
right?
Yeah,
well, Captain America, I don't think would belittle people because he's I'm so fucking awesome.
I was thinking more of the I don't even try because I can't win.
No. Right. She wasn't that end either. Exactly. She wasn't Cap before powers, and she wasn't.
Cap would walk head first into fights
correct.
That he couldn't win.
Well, no, we're talking about two different aspects.
Okay.
She had the capabilities of a post super serum Captain America.
Sure.
With the confidence of she started as post super serum Captain America. She had the confidence. She had the abilities. Like, the movie starts with her shooting fucking laser beams out of her hands.
Sure.
Like, she's already there. And I like that she had confidence and quirkiness and quippiness and whatever without being an asshole about it. Like, you get with Tony Stark at his worst or Star-Lord at his worst. But with Star-Lord, it's kind of lovable because we know he's not as badass as he pretends to be, blah, blah, blah. But I liked where her attitude was, is all I'm saying. Also, the biggest objection I would have with the film is that the villain is very forgettable and unimpressive and
so
unimportant.
So it's a Marvel origin movie.
It's worse than that. Like it's sub that, but that's not even much of a disadvantage of the film or a critique of the film, because the way that the movie's structured, it doesn't matter. Like that's like if you watch Stand By Me and I said that bully wasn't a very memorable villain. Well, sure, but the movie's not about the bully. The movie's about their journey, and the bully just happens to be part of that journey,
yeah.
Right? And it felt like that. Yeah. Was it Dutch? Butch? Was it Butch was the bully? What's the great line at the end of Stand By Me?
Oh, fuck if I remember.
I think it was Butch. When he's like, because the kid's got a gun, and there's like five bullies. And I think it's Butch. He's like, what are you going to do, shoot all of us? And Will Wheaton just goes, no, Butch, just you.
Yeah.
And he just backs away and leaves. It's like, that's a good answer, kid.
Yeah, I haven't seen Stand By Me in such a long time. Also, no, I agree. I guess
no,
it's more
Thor
of a
was total asshole. In fact, the whole point of Thor's journey is he starts asshole and ends. So,
well, that was basically the
Captain
whole meaning.
Captain Marvel starts where Thor is at the end of Thor 1.
Yes. Thor, actually, the reason why he's even thrown to Earth in the first place is to learn humility.
Correct.
Because he is just an obnoxious ass.
Yeah.
He basically gets grounded to Earth.
Yeah.
And that's why I like it. She starts where Thor is at the end of Thor 1, where she has the power and the confidence without the eagle assholishness.
Correct.
And I enjoyed that.
I was more objecting to the comparison to Captain America, because Captain America was never put his ego or above everything else. He was always about the, I hate bullies, I'm going to...
But she has ego. There's a great line I saw that was like a quote from the creator of the Carol Danvers Captain America, where she said...
Captain Marvel.
Or Captain Marvel, rather. Where she said, like, a big part of Captain Marvel is every time she's knocked down, she stands back up. Every time. And that's an aspect of Captain America's character, too. But the difference is, when Captain America stands back up, it's because it's the right thing to do. When Captain Marvel stands back up, it's because fuck you. I'm like, yeah. She's not standing up because it's, you know, the little beanie Captain America, I can do this all day. She's standing up because, oh, no, it's on, bitch.
Yeah. We're dropping into not really spoilers at all, but man, I just got done watching Captain America, the first Avenger again, just yesterday. And man, his line where he says, I could do this all day, just makes me want to watch Civil War again. Because that sequence in there is... probably one of my favorite sequences ever in one of the Marvel films.
That line, I can do this all day, is the boiling down of the Marvel Cinematic Universe Captain America, to five words. That's everything about his character in five words.
Yeah. Oh. And I usually don't like Boy Scouts that much. Like Superman, Cap though,
Cap's
is a
well-done Boy Scout.
Much better character.
Also, people who are Team Iron Man, there's something terribly wrong with them.
Yes, correct. Dan has no opinion.
Oh, no. I'm still, like, it breaks my mind that Jay is Team Iron Man. It 100% breaks my mind.
Yes.
No, Dan, you can watch Captain Marvel because of all of the movies.
I mean, I'm
recently,
going to shotgun all of them at some point.
Well, I mean, you don't even need to do that for Captain Marvel, because it's like basically the only context you're missing is one of the post-credit scenes.
Sure.
I mean,
he's gleaned from cultural impact. Like,
I mean,
Dan knows about the snap.
Correct. Yeah.
Like, you can't exist and not know about the snap.
Correct. I have not watched the movies. I know enough to converse with my wife and friends about all of them.
Chronologically speaking, Captain America takes place first, except for the World War II flashback Captain America.
Correct.
Mm. So, frankly, like, if you're going to do the chronological watch, it's like the first one anyway. So you might as well just watch Captain Marvel.
I mean, the only
Captain America is technically.
Except for Captain America.
America, then.
Although Captain America First Avenger ends after Captain Marvel. So you need to watch 95% of Captain America, then pause it, then watch Captain Marvel, then watch the rest of Captain America.
Yeah.
And that's chronological viewing sequence.
I saw an update to the chronological viewing, and they basically mentioned the First Avenger will be first, and then the second one should be Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Because it takes 40s, place
90s, and then the rest are in the 2000s.
Yeah, I'll say the only mainly centered around the Tesseract is the big thing.
Yeah, the only other thing. I mean, the MacGuffin in the movie, you get more context with the other ones,
but
and
you don't
there
need
is
it.
One. Mm-hmm. There is, yeah, you don't need it.
They give context to the other films. It's just
I mean,
a MacGuffin.
And that's the other interesting thing. We'll be watching it in pure chronological order as opposed to release order.
Yeah,
just because it does release order
do
bounces
that?
It around a bunch.
Yeah,
I'm having my girlfriend do that,
and
to make her watch all the Marvel films in. that recommended chronological order. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there is one character that is shared with Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
Okay, that, I've seen that, so. Okay.
That is not true. There are two characters that are shared with Guardians of the Galaxy 1.
There is one that is not fleshed out at all in Captain Marvel.
There are two that are not fleshed out at all in Captain Marvel.
Who was the other one?
I mean, neither of the... The villain from Guardians of the Galaxy is in Captain Marvel, yes. As is the other villain from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Knife across throat equals dead.
Yeah.
Is in it. Are you still blanking?
Yes, I'm still blanking.
So when you opening a Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Dancing, singing, yeah. Gets caught by guys, and the dude goes, "Who?"
Yeah.
That guy's in Captain Marvel. Okay.
Yeah. He's
sweet.
He's one of, well, I mean.
Is it ringing bells
no,
now?
No, it is not.
What?
He's got the metal on his head. He's the guy. Oh. He's like the main fucking henchman. Drax rips his skull open and says, Knife across throat equals dead, because Drax doesn't understand how metaphors
okay.
work.
Okay, yes.
That guy is
that
in Captain Marvel.
That guy is in Captain Marvel. I did not notice him.
He was like a very prevalent part of Team Kree.
He's one of her squad mates.
Okay. Yeah.
He's the one who was objectively very handsome.
I did not connect that. I did not realize it was the same character. Because
she like mocks him about something, and then another guy, the guy who's totally looks like fucking giant fucker from Game of Thrones, but I don't think is.
Oh, yeah. I
thought it was him until the credits, though. Uh-huh. But he's like, it is funny because you are objectively very handsome.
Is it Giant's Bane? Torvis Giant's Bane?
Tormund Giant Bane.
Yeah. No, I did not realize they were the same character.
Oh, you even have the same hair, dude. Yeah.
Well, except he doesn't have like cybernetic enhancements in Captain Marvel. So somewhere between Captain Marvel and Guardians, something happens where he gets cybernetic enhancements.
Yeah. I didn't realize they were the same character. But no, I mean there was one villain shared in the movie that was not fleshed out in Captain Marvel.
It's only a villain depending how you feel about hegemonic fascism.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So there is one guy that what he does in the movie makes a whole lot more sense if you've seen Guardians of the Galaxy. But
not really.
His job is made clear in this.
Yeah.
This is what you do.
Yeah.
He's like, this is what I do. In fact, like they never even bring up what he is in. It's just his name in Guardians of the Galaxy. In this, you're like, oh, that's not even his name. That's just his job title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's.
It's like if you saw a prequel to Guardians of the Galaxy where they showed Drax the Destroyer as a group of people called Destroyers who did stuff. And you're like, oh, it's actually a job title. I thought he was just called Drax the Destroyer. Jesus, this is a long episode.
I will catch it.
I'm going to stop talking now.
Yeah, we're done with this episode. Thanks, guys, for watching. We'll see you guys next week.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.